Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. Feel alright, I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from this.
Alright, alright, alright. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. At 5 o'clock, following my show, is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich and then the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday. Give me two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. That's one artist, two songs. You pick them. We play them a little bit later on. Two for Tuesday, 312-981-7200. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, our good friend Tom Appel is going to join us. Yes, it's time for his monthly visit. He's from Consumer Guide Automotive, and we will answer any and all of your car or automotive-related questions. We got a lot of news stories from the automotive world to talk about, and some stuff that that he wrote on the blog at consumerguide.com. And it's always fun to have Tom in, and he wants to answer your questions and help you out. If you're in the market for a new or used car, you have questions, any automotive-related questions, he'd love to help you out. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Also coming up a little bit later on, there's an article in Business Insider about the strangest cars that were ever designed. So we figure, once we're done talking with Tom, we'll continue talking a little bit of car stuff. So we're going to talk about some of the strangest cars ever designed. On this date, in 1977, the number one song in the country was Gonna Fly Now from Rocky. That was the number one song in the country. So we're going to talk about best film theme songs. That's coming up, too. And a couple of other topics we're going to jump into. As always, the phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk, text, and two for Tuesday requests. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. Whatever's happening on the show is happening on the Facebook page, and you should like us right now. So facebook.com/Nick D Show. Also, subscribe to our podcasts. Lots of people listen to our podcasts, and we're really happy about that. It's free. It's easy. Subscribe to the podcast. It will automatically show up to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. And you can check it out at WGNradio.com. Get those podcast subscriptions going right now. So that's all that's happening on the show this morning. Again, two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Get them in now at 312-981-7200. Let me say hello to my producer, Tom, who is manning the phones. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick.
Tom Hush. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm all right.
Well, after that that beating last night for the Cubbies.
God. I don't even... That was insane. I mean, 18-5.
That's a real Steel Town smackdown.
The Pirates had 23 hits in that game. Cubs had 13. 36 hits in that game. It was completely insane. I mean, it was just absolutely nuts. It just got to the point where it was just absurd. Like, absolutely absurd.
I had to turn it off.
Oh, my God. It was nuts.
If I wanted to watch a massacre, I think I've got Texas Chainsaw on
Blu-ray,
you know?
Can put that in there. But, it was just embarrassing. It was like a train wreck. I couldn't turn away. But
Pat Hughes was great, though.
Pat Hughes, you know, as always... At the end of the game, near the end of the game, he said, Ron, it's time for you to pick the player of the game, and I'm guessing it's going to be a position player. Yeah, because when the pitching staff gives up 18 runs, you're not going to pick a pitcher as the player of the game. Yeah, that was brutal. That was absolutely unbelievably brutal. So, hey, they still got tonight.
Yeah, that's the best part about baseball. That's there's right. always another game.
There's always another game. So, in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
Doing very well.
Yeah? All right.
Ready to go on some vacation. Yeah. I'm short. That's what we used to call it in the military.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'm short. So yeah. Don't bother me. No.
Yeah. I love that term.
I know. It's so
I love
good,
that term.
It?
There was this movie. There was a movie with Dabney Coleman years ago called Short Time.
Oh.
And he played a cop, and he was...
Close to retirement.
Close to retirirement, yeah.
Yeah, you're short.
Yeah, he's short time.
Uh-huh. That's so. What we used to say. It's really fitting in the military because whenever a guy is getting short, and that usually means he's getting close to getting out of the military.
Right.
Could mean that he's, as well, like if you're overseas, he or she could be deploying back to the States soon.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's also exciting to go back to the States. So when you're short, but you can spot them a mile away.
Oh, you can?
Because they just don't care anymore. Yeah. Their uniform looks tattered. They just have this, don't even ask me to do anything look in their eyes.
Oh, that makes sense, I guess. Yeah. Leave me alone. I'm short.
Vic, I do have a quick military question for you.
Okay.
Now, someone said to me that, you know, you guys have to make your bed, make your bunk real nice and tidy, you know, military fold, all that kind of stuff. Is it true that you're supposed to be able to bounce a quarter off of it or something? Is that a saying or a thing?
When I was in basic training, I never saw any drill instructor or TI in the Air Force. They call it a TI, a training instructor. I never saw one do that. But I would say that if you folded it properly and tight enough, you could probably get a little bounce off of that with a quarter. Oh, I'm sure we tried it, but gosh, you're going so far back. But yeah. Yeah, I know now, and also it's very different between the branches, the boot camp, Marines boot camp, Army's basic training. They're all very different, so I can't speak to all of them. But when I was in the Air Force, basic training was, the beds certainly had to be extremely tight, and the corners were a point of interest of the TIs.
A point of interest.
But
I love that.
I never saw one pull a quarter out and bounce it.
Wow.
Right. And you do really just get that one thin wool green blanket to sleep in for
and that's it. Yeah. That's it. Wow. All right. Well, now you're when do you leave for vacation, Vic?
Yeah, I was just looking at this earlier today. We were mapping out some trips. We leave on I think we leave next week. You think I'd know this.
Okay.
Yeah, because we're going to be in town for 4th of July. We're still trying to decide whether we'll spend it in Chicago or out in Woodstock, which is where some of my family lives. But but yeah, so I think it's early next week, either Monday or Tuesday, 8th or 9th, something like that.
Okay.
But I'm actually on vacation after tonight, and then my shift tomorrow, and then I'm done for a while.
Yeah,
be back mid-month.
I'm off till. I'm not off mid-month. I'm off until.
Yeah, you'll be back. Well,
I'll be back Monday morning.
Yeah,
I'm working tomorrow, Wednesday morning, and
right.
Then off Thursday, Friday for the holiday, and there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it should be a fun weekend. I got a birthday this weekend, so that's always fun. That's on Saturday. My birthday's on Saturday, and I'm going to treat myself to see the movie Midsummer. That's my gift to me, is the new horror movie Midsummer.
Self-care.
Yeah.
2.5 hours of horror.
Yeah. I'm sure my mom will be thrilled to see that movie. I'm sure that she's going to be thrilled. But I believe we're going to go to the Gale Street Inn afterwards, as you do when you celebrate anything. You go to the Gale Street Inn, the greatest restaurant on the planet. So, but yeah, it's going to be fun. All right. Let's take a break here. And if you've got a car question or an automotive question of any kind, Tom Appel is going to join us. And he always likes to answer and help everybody out. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. We've got a whole bunch of car news stories to talk about, but also answering your questions is Tom Appel. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. We'll do that a little bit later on. You have your 2 for Tuesday. It's one artist, two songs. Get your request in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're about to say hello to Tom Appel from Consumer Guide Automotive. If you have any car or automotive question at all, he'll be happy to help you out. And the phone lines and the text lines are open right now for any car or automotive question. Get him in there now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And you can check out consumerguide.com as well. Let's welcome Tom back to the show. Tom, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. How you been?
I'm good. Good. Thank you.
All right. Very, very cool. I saw that on the social media, you and the family went to go see the Stones.
We did. Yes.
How was that?
It was good. And I really wanted my daughter to see the Stones.
Was it her first time?
It was her first time. It's likely her only time, I suspect. I think she was a little overwhelmed. She had never been to a concert with 62,000 other people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's quite a thing.
Well, you got to see him at least once. You know what I mean? That's, you know.
You do.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. All right, well, tell everybody about Consumer Guide Automotive.
Yeah, we've been around since 1967. We went online in 1995 and really never looked back. All of our new car and used car reviews live at consumerguide.com. We try to have some fun with what's going on in the auto biz and look back at auto culture and auto history, and that lives at our blog. You can get there from consumerguide.com or just go directly to the cgdailydrive.com blog.
And there you go. And so what have you been driving lately? I always like to ask you this. What have you been driving?
Wow, I just drove two crazy vehicles back-to-back. I just drove the Range Rover Sport SVR. This is the sportiest of all Range Rover vehicles, and it's basically the second-largest Range Rover vehicle stuffed full of a 575-horsepower supercharged V8.
Whoa.
It is kind of a silly thing. It is also wonderful.
Yeah.
If for some reason I suddenly became very, very rich, this might be on my shopping list.
Mm.
And I swapped that today for the 2020 Kia Soul GT line, which I absolutely love. Other end of the scale, this is under 30 grand. I love the Kia Soul, and they just made it a lot better for 2020.
Wow, that's great. What else has been test driven around the office?
We recently drove the Jaguar I-Pace. That's the new all-electric Jaguar, and it's part of a spate of electric vehicles coming from Europe in the form of luxury crossovers. Liked it a lot. We had a couple of little electrical gremlins crack up, but this was a prototype vehicle, so we're going to give it a little bit of slack. Very, very fast, a little bit cramped. I think it may be a little sporty for the people it's trying to attract, but certainly promising.
Oh, okay. And how often do you guys, how long do you drive the cars generally? I've asked you this question before, but just remind everybody.
Yeah. We have four full-time editors, and we try to get each one of them through a vehicle over a period of 2 weeks. So we swap on Mondays and Thursdays, essentially.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got some news stories we're going to talk about. And again, The phone lines are open. The text lines are open. If you have a question for Tom that's car or automotive related, we'd love to help you out. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's start off with a text real quick here, Tom.
Sure.
630 area code says, did Honda fix the problem of gas mixing with the oil for the CR-V 2019?
I don't know much about that particular problem. I think there might have been a silent recall on that. If the caller wanted to, they could give me a call and I could, or send me an email and I could look into that further. I don't know a lot about that engine deal.
Okay. All right. So if you want to, and by the way, you can also go to the Consumer Guide Automotive and subscribe to the newsletter and everything, right?
Yep. Just send me an email. Yep.
Okay. There you go. All right. Let's start up now. Here's an interesting story. People are holding on to their cars a lot longer. Lots of people have older cars, and the figure keeps going up.
Yeah, we hit an all-time high last year of 11.8 years old. So the average car on the road now is 12 years old.
Wow.
If you look around Chicago, it doesn't seem like it's quite that high, but apparently it is. And this is an interesting story because there's a bunch of reasons for this. And I'm not entirely sure we can identify all the reasons, but cars last longer. But people are also paying longer on their car payments, so they're taking better care of their cars. So it's a very interesting story. Also, apparently, according to the same article, the people out west are holding onto their vehicles longer than people out east. for whatever reason. Although they're not ravaged by snow, winter, and rust, so that might be part of the reason.
Yeah, it probably is a weather-related thing, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And how does this affect... Now, the people are holding on to their cars longer, an average of 12 years the cars are out there, are 12 years old. How does this affect the sale of cars?
Well, that's a good question. And we actually ran into a situation where, after the recession, there was a dearth of used cars for a while, so used car prices kept going up and up. So it depends on how long and for what reason people are holding on to cars. But right now, it's starting to affect new car sales. People are stuck under their payments longer. Used cars are holding their value a little bit better. So new car sales are starting to suffer for the first time since the recession, really.
Mm. And now, in people that you just talked to, like people around the office or anything like that, they're regular cars, not the test driving cars that they do. Are they older? Do you have older cars too?
Yeah, sort of. I'm trying to think of it. My wife and I hold on to cars forever.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, and actually other car guys tend to do the same thing. It's funny. We write about new cars, and then we just never buy new cars. It's a very strange cycle.
Yeah. What's the car that you had the longest?
Oh, wow. My wife had her 2002 Volvo S60 for close to 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, great car.
Yeah, yeah. Is that the case? The guys in the office too, they hold on to their cars too for a long time.
Oh, forever. Yeah,
yeah.
I know. Our guy Damon's driving a Mazda 5. I don't know if people even remember that vehicle. It was sort of a mini minivan, but I think he's had that now for the better part of a decade.
I'm trying to remember how long I had cars. I don't think I had. I think it was my fantastic Ford Escort that I had the longest, and I got it in 90. It was an 86, and I got it in 90. And I had it for about 10 years.
There you go.
Yeah, a little more. I think a little bit more than 10 years. That's the car I think I had the most. And I drove that thing into the ground, Tom.
That's the thing to do. The guys, when there used to be Click and Clack on WTT, or, I'm sorry, on
yeah,
Channel...
Yeah.
On NPR, I'm sorry,
yeah,
on NPR.
NPR, yeah.
Yeah, they had a rule, buy a 10-year-old car and keep it for 10 years.
Yeah, Mike, when I bought it, it was a 4-year-old car. But I kept it for 10 years, and I drove that thing into the ground, man.
So you got your money's worth.
I did, and I did the same thing with the Firebird I had. I drove that thing into the ground, although that thing was in the garage every 5 minutes. It was a 70. I've talked to you about this car before.
Yeah,
Tom.
Yeah, you have.
77 Firebird. That thing was in the shop constantly, man. Was that car known, that make and that year known for being having to be repaired a lot?
Yeah, one of the great tragedies, I think, of the 70s auto world was that the Camaro and the Firebird, which were mechanically identical, were both built in General Motors' Van Nuys plant, which is one of the lowest quality manufacturing plants on the planet. The failure and glitch rate out of that factory were like 4 times over the industry standard.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me with the experience I had. It doesn't surprise me at all. I had to have the wheels were unaligned, and it was just every kind of mechanical problem that you could have with a car I had with that car.
And it's a shame because they were gorgeous.
Oh, cool.
Such good looking cars.
Yeah, very cool. Mine was cranberry.
There you go.
It had the cranberry interior. Everything was cranberry, and it was cool, man. So, all right, people driving around in old cars. There you go. Do you know anybody that has a car that's like excessively old?
Oh, wow. There is a guy. Hats off to Joe Weisenfelder, who works for cars.com, which is located in Chicago, who's driving around now, I think, in a 30-year-old Mercedes.
Wow.
God love him, because the thing is beautiful. Yeah, he keeps it on the road. It's a diesel, and it's fabulous.
And wow, there's 30 years old. Are those, as cars get older, are they harder to take care of, to get fixed?
They can be, yeah. The thing about that is a car that's 30 years old is just so much simpler than a car now.
Yeah.
That the basic systems are just a little bit easier to maintain. I don't even know how a car sold right now is going to last 30 years. I think there's just too many very complicated and expensive things that can go wrong.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm trying to think of somebody who I know had a car for a very long time. I think 15 years, I think, is the longest of somebody that I know who had a car for that long period of time. But it's interesting to see about the old cars. Okay. All right. We've got some more stuff that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about self-driving cars. We've got some news in that. And I just got a text here, Tom. 630 area code says, any idea if Nissan will bring back the Xterra?
Funny you should ask. I just wrote a piece about this about 3-4 months ago about the 2021 Nissan Xterra. This may or may not happen depending on Chinese sanctions. The Xterra would have been built in China and imported to the U.S. It would have been based on a vehicle that is built for the Chinese market. But for people who don't know, this would be a mid-sized sort of body-on-frame SUV, a very traditional rock-poundy kind of SUV, kind of a nice addition to Nissan's lineup. Probably not going to happen the way things are right now.
Okay. Nissan has a lot of brands. I mean, how long was the Xterra around?
Wow, the Xterra lasted through most of the 90s, and it was kind of a bargain for a while.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. That answers that question. Might not be happening. All right, Tom, we're going to take a break in a minute here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about self-driving cars with the challenges that we're going to have to deal with as self-driving cars. So, Tom, hold on a second.
Will do.
All right, Tom Appel is with us, and he is here and to help you out. And if you've got a question or a concern, it's 312-981-7200, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And the phone lines are open and the text lines are open if you have any car or automotive questions. 312-981-7200. We'll jump back into the conversation with Tom right after this.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. Life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. Coming up a little bit later on, we're talking cars with Tom Appel, and if you want to join us with a question, you need some help or some advice automotive-related, it's 312-981-7200 for talking text. We're going to also talk about the strangest cars ever designed. And then on this date in 1977, Gonna Fly Now from Rocky was the number one song in the country. So we're going to talk about best film theme songs. Right. And more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Two for Tuesday. Get your request and we'll play them later. Two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. Tom Appel joins us once a month from Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom and check out consumerguide.com. And Tom, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And we've been talking a lot. I mean, it seems like you know, every visit that you have with us, the subject of self-driving cars pops up at some point.
Yeah.
And there's some challenges that the World Economic Forum executive is talking about. What are the challenges facing self-driving cars? I know we've discussed a little bit of this before, but what's the latest?
Yeah, according to someone named Michelle Avery, who's head of autonomous mobility for the World Economic Forum, she identifies two things, and I think that people might respond, well, duh, when they hear this, but they go a little bit deeper than the obvious points, and that's technology and the business model. And on the technology side, it's not so much about being able to, for the vehicles being able to actually do what they need to do. It's for people to have faith in them being able to do what they're going to do, which is a huge hurdle. But the second one's more interesting, and that's the business model. And one of the things that we're looking at here is the reality that if you're my age, you will probably never own an autonomous vehicle that you just go in, doesn't have a steering wheel, and you just say, take me to work. That's probably not going to happen anytime soon. What we're looking at probably is corporately owned vehicles that are doing ride hailing in a limited range, and that's what's going to happen first, and there needs to be a business model to support that. And this whole thing, the whole movement towards autonomy can collapse or significantly be slowed down if that doesn't actually work out and the demand is there. So we are actually approaching an interesting point where there are hurdles in the way that may be bigger than anyone thinks.
I see. You know what I've always wanted in terms of like the automated driving? I want the taxi guy from Total Recall.
I want that guy too.
I want that guy.
Was that guy voiced by John Cleese? I think he was.
Is it John? Oh yeah. You know what? I think it might have been.
Which makes it more awesome.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I understand. You know, you've driven some self-driving cars, and it's pretty freaky, right?
It's totally freaky, and you really want to intervene. But you have to trust that these things aren't turning off the road and slamming into barriers.
Yeah.
And that it's going to work. Yeah, we drove the Cadillac CT6 with Super Cruise, and me and three other editors were sitting in the car biting our nails, but it worked. It worked very well.
Yeah. And have there been issues with these self-driving cars?
There have been some, and Tesla's ran into the most issues, but Tesla has been the most bold with the technology. The Cadillac that we just discussed actually only works on roads that have been pre-routed by Cadillac. So Cadillac has done its own mapping,
uh-huh.
and there's only certain roads that it'll work on. The Edens, for example, is on the map, but Palatine Road is not. Whereas Tesla is a fully autonomous vehicle that isn't going by a map. It's going by just the hardware that's on the vehicle. And they've run into a few problems with that, and there have been some fairly well-publicized crashes as a result. And I think that you're going to find that traditional manufacturers, and by that I mean not Tesla, are probably going to play this a lot more conservatively than does Tesla.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on the self-driving car situations as they proceed. Jim sends in a text, Tom, that says, I have a chance to get a 2007 Range Rover, 115,000 miles for $2,000. Should I get it?
Wow. That's one of those vehicles where if you have a big problem, you just leave it by the side of the road and walk away. If you want that, I rarely say anything about buying an extended warranty. If you can get one on that car, I might do it because the parts and systems are so expensive to repair.
Okay. All right. John says, how do you know your side mirrors are in the right spot?
Wow. It's funny. The Autobahn Country Club in Joliet, Illinois has a teen defensive driving course that my daughter went through.
Yeah.
And I watched the course with her, and that guy's advice was the best. And the guy that ran that class, and he said, you don't need to see the side of your car. So what you should do is align it with the side of your car and then move it just far enough that you're no longer seeing the side of your car. That was his advice, and it works pretty well.
Oh, okay. All right. 815 area code with a text. By the way, if you have a question or a text, it's 312-981-7200. I have a 2010 Hyundai Tucson. Absolutely no problems ever. Should I take it in to see if there's an impending issue while it's still under a 10-year warranty?
The 10-year warranty is just on the drivetrain. And if you're not feeling any problems, there probably aren't any problems. I really wouldn't worry about it. But yeah, it's a shame to see that warranty run out, but you haven't had any problems, so that's good news.
Yeah. All right. How about this? Dodge launches the 2020 Charger SRT Hellcat, the world's most powerful and fastest mass-produced car.
Yes. Yes. Now that headline is sort of incomplete. There has been a Charger Hellcat. There hasn't been a Charger Hellcat wide body.
Oh.
That's the big news now, is the wide body. And this is a big deal because there was a wide body version of the similar Challenger, which is the two-door version of that car. The wide body allows Dodge to slap bigger wheels and tires on there so it can hook up a little bit faster with less wheel slip, so it actually accelerates more quickly. So, yeah, that's the news now, is the wide body edition. And it's kind of great looking because the fenders flare out 3.5 inches.
Oh,
it's just mean looking.
Yeah, that looks cool. That sounds cool. That sounds really cool. And so is there, I'm looking at this article. I wasn't aware that there was a muscle car war going on, the muscle car wars.
Yeah, Ford just launched the GT350. That is, for people who know the name Shelby, that is a Shelby massaged vehicle that Ford worked with them on. And that features a 5.2-liter V8 with a flat-plane crank, which is a thing that sounds very cool, and it's kind of complicated, but it makes for a great-sounding exhaust. Ford's about to launch the GT500, which is a supercharged version of that same vehicle. And I believe they're talking about 760 horsepower. Which is 5 more than the new Corvette ZR1. So, yeah, it's kind of a horsepower war. These are silly big numbers. And cars, we just talked about the Challenger, too. These cars are all now doing 0 to 60 in around 3 seconds, which is just unfathomable. And there's no place to do that during your commute.
Wow. All right. I wasn't aware. Are muscle cars like a bit? I mean, are people still into them?
No, not really.
Okay.
Actually, sales of the Camaro have been pretty disappointing. The Mustang's still selling well. The Challenger and Charger from Dodge are selling pretty well, but they've been doing an unbelievable campaign of different updates and special editions and tweaks, and they're just constantly in the news with new additions, so they're really working it. But, yeah, I think overall the performance car market is shrinking, at least the non luxury performance car market is.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I was just thinking about muscle, my favorite muscle car in a movie. And it's the 71 Plymouth Cuda from Phantasm.
Oh.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that's like the coolest. But have you ever seen Phantasm?
I haven't seen Phantasm in 30 years, but okay. Yes, I have seen it.
That car is unbelievable. And they had a few of them. Don Coscarelli, the director, told me that the car enthusiasts hate him because he cut a hole in the roof of one of them so that he could have a scene where, like, they had a sunroof where he could, like, the guy could stand up outside of the car in the sunroof and shoot at another car behind him. And so the car, you know, the car collectors wanted to kill him, you know, for cutting a hole in the roof of the Cuda.
Yeah, I know the producers of the Dukes of Hazzard burned through a fair number of Chargers too.
Yeah,
that reducing the amount of those that are still left.
Yeah, well, I mean, this Cuda is just it's just the coolest car, and I think that Don told me that they had like four of them that they used in the movie, and like one of them goes stolen, and you know, it's just one of those deals where you got this really cool black Cuda and everybody wants it.
That was a thing that happened with the Rockford Files too, that they burned through a lot of Firebirds that just ended up being given to members of the staff. So there just aren't a lot of them left.
Yeah. I loved that car too. That was a great car on the Rockford Files.
Oh, it's an all time favorite of mine.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, what about this? There's a story about Porsche. Expect sports cars to change more in the next 7 years than they did in the last 70. What's going on there? We were talking muscle cars. Now we're going to go on to sports cars. What's changing?
Yeah, this is a really interesting thing for Porsche to be confronting out in public, but it's also something that's been happening for a long time. Porsche is fabulously and famously known for the 911, which is one of the purest sports cars ever built, and that car is now 70 years old. And
I have driven the
911. Yeah, it's incredible. And I've driven the 911, and it is everything that it should be. But the 911 now accounts for something like 15% of total Porsche sales. And most Porsche sales now come from crossovers and sedans, which is sort of a weird turn of events. But
yeah.
Porsche is also realizing that to keep up with things, they need to go electric as well, or they will need to go electric eventually, that there's just not a lot of traditional sports car buyers anymore. So they're about to launch something called the Taycan, which is a vehicle that is, in terms of specs, very similar to the Tesla Model S. It's a little bit tidier in size, and you would expect it to handle better, and it probably will. But this is a really telling vehicle, because we'll see what it does for Porsche. It's a sedan, for one thing. It's not a sports car, although it'll handle and look a little bit like a sports car. But they're betting a lot on this, and per the article that we're discussing here, they actually talked about immediately doubling production intent. So we'll see if they're overreaching or if there's a market for this. Now, we've seen other electric vehicles not do too well. The Jaguar R-Pace we mentioned before, they can't give away. So, and I don't know what's going on yet with the Audi e-tron, which is another all-electric vehicle. So we'll see if Porsche's got something here or not.
How's Porsche doing in general?
Porsche seems to do very well. They sell cars at basically list price. They sell a lot of them, but they just don't sell the traditional sports cars anymore. They sell a lot of the Cayenne, which is their big crossover, and the Cayman. Not the Cayman, I'm sorry. Their little... I can't think of the name of it right now, but they sell a compact crossover that's very popular.
And that's really weird those are the kind of cars that are now selling very popular for Porsche.
Yeah, it really is. And when Porsche introduced the Cayenne, which was their first crossover, they were famously quoted. Someone there was famously quoted as saying, "We sell cars like the Cayenne, so we can still sell the 911." But now they're just in the regular car business like everybody else.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. All right. Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right. Tom Appel is with us. If you have any car or automotive related question and you want to jump in here, phone lines and text lines are open. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We got a few more stories to talk about, and any and all of your car and automotive related questions via text or talk at 312-981-7200. All right. More with Tom after this on 720 WGN.
Maybe you can drive my car. Yes, I'm going to be a star.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday morning. That means 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. Tom Appel joins us once a month. He is a publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And let's get back to our visit with Tom. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a text here with perhaps the weirdest question we've ever received, Tom.
Oh.
Are you ready?
Yes.
63 Oreo Kid area code says, if I run my used oil through a Brita filter, will it be good to put back in my car?
Well, you're going to ruin the Brita filter, and no, that oil's no.
That text came across the text line, and as soon as Tom saw it, he's like, "We have to print this up and read it."
The actual straight answer is you change oil not because it's dirty, but because it's broken down. And you can't fix that with a Brita or anything else.
I just don't have a Brita filter. That's an unbelievable question. All right. Here's Bob on WGN. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Could I ask Tom a question? I saw a 2004 Thunderbird two-seater convertible with the hard top that comes off. These people want $10,000 for it. It's immaculate through, and it runs great. And will that car go up in price if I kept it in good shape?
Yeah, that's a fascinating car. The Revival Thunderbird that was out for a few years, I think 2004 might have been right in the middle of that run. Kind of a good-looking car, didn't catch on with the buying public. It's available only as a convertible, and the hardtop that you mentioned was optional. But it's a two-seater powered by a 3.9-liter V8. Very likable, not that sporty, but a great highway car, or just to go look at leaves or something like that. Yes, they are appreciating or holding steady right now, so anything you spend on that, you will probably get back in the future. It's not going to depreciate.
$10,000 sound like a good price, Tom?
It sounds like a great price. Actually, I've seen them for as much as $25 or $35 in great condition.
Oh, there you go. All right, Bob, that's a resounding yes. All right, thank you for the call, Bob. Here's Michael on WGN. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, what's up?
So I have a 2000 Toyota Solara, which is basically a Camry coupe with the V6 1MZ FE engine. And I had read online that motor has overly sensitive knock sensors and that they need to be replaced around 60,000 miles. I haven't had the car for long enough to know if they've gone bad in their lifetime, and they're about $500 to replace both. And if you don't replace them, you get reduced engine power, which obviously no one wants. I was wondering if you think it'd be a good idea to replace them anyway.
I don't know anything about that knock sensor situation, but you can kind of test yourself by using regular gas and hitting the gas hard. And if it seems like the engine's kind of bogging down or slowing down, or if it starts to make noise like knock, then yeah, there's probably an issue. But if you want, I don't think it would cost very much to drop by a Toyota dealership and just ask them what they think you should do.
All righty.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, Michael, thanks. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Tom, we haven't talked about the real quickly, we can touch on this. Man, gas prices, huh?
Yeah. God. Yeah. 19 cents as of today.
Isn't that nuts?
It is nuts, and we can only hope that the infrastructure updates based on that money actually happen as promised.
Yeah, absolutely. I they better. Because there are people driving to Indiana to get gas.
Yeah, I was actually trying to figure out today, in case we talked about this, how many gallons of gas are sold in Illinois a year, and I couldn't figure it out. Couldn't find a number, but that's lots of money.
It is.
Every road should be glass smooth in a year because of it.
I totally agree. No, there better not be any problems with any bridges or anything.
No. The bridges should be painted.
Yep.
They should work perfectly.
Yeah.
No chunks of concrete falling from them anymore.
I can't tell you how angry my father is about this. Oh, man, he's so angry about the prices, the gas prices. It's crazy. All right, so you wrote a piece about bumper stickers.
Yes, I did.
All right, and you got some pictures here. Let's tell us about this piece that you wrote about bumper stickers.
Yeah, I see a lot of bumper stickers. I spend a lot of time in traffic. Yeah. I'm usually irritated that I'm spending time in traffic. And I spend a lot of time looking at the backs of people's cars. So I try to just identify sort of the actual different illnesses involved in placing too many stickers on your car. And yeah. I identified, I think, four or five of those here. And one of them was the obvious. I call it the gateway drug of auto stickering. Mm-hmm. And that's family pride. Now, full confession, just coming out, we actually had a My Daughter is an Honor Roll Student sticker on my wife's car for a while.
Okay.
So we fell prey to it. But we didn't go further.
Now, what about these the stick figure family? That's always one that I find fascinating. And what's really funny is there's a picture that's made it through the internet where, you know, you got the mother, you got the father, and there's like nine kids. And then there was, you know, the back window of the car was dusty, so somebody wrote, "Get off her," on the window. Because there were like 11 kids and like four dogs and stuff. So it was like, "Get off her," was written. But where did those come from? Everybody's got those things now.
I don't know, but I think that on a Saturday, if you drive around Woodfield Mall, one half of all minivans have a stick figure family.
I wouldn't doubt that number at all, Tom.
And the amusing, it was amusing for 5 minutes, the giant dinosaur chasing the stick figure family
right.
off the car. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's
right.
Getting old now, too.
Yep. Okay, well, what about the mixed messaging, losing focus?
Yes. That's the next stage, where people have a cat sticker, a dog sticker, and then some country sticker that you can't identify. It's like, you know, it's not as easy as Poland or Germany. It's some country that you've never heard of. There's just two letters for, like PJ. And I'm like, I don't know what country that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
How about the over-dedication when you want everybody to know what your cause is or your passion is, and you've got ribbons all over your car?
Yeah, that's the next stage, yeah. That you have causes.
Yeah.
I'm glad the ribbons are going out of vogue now, because there was just too many of them. They were all different colors, and I think people were becoming self-mocking.
Oh, yeah. No, there were it got ridiculous after a while with all the different colored ribbons, and cars driving around with 12 ribbons on the back of their car.
Yeah, and I've got a picture here of a car with three ribbons and I believe a dog paw.
Right. I see that one. I'm looking at it right now with a dog paw. How about, "It's not my car, inherited vehicle abuse"?
Yeah, this is a high school problem.
Yeah.
Where some kid ends up adopting a car that his father hands him down when his dad gets a new car and just starts covering it with band stickers. Now, when I was in high school, it was the Public Image Limited sticker.
Oh, sure, PIL, yeah. Yeah, that was a big one. All right, and then finally, this last one is nuts. These are the people who have you can't see the paint job anymore on the car.
No, and I've got this great picture, and people have actually emailed me that they've seen this car.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, but this woman has a lot of causes. They seem to be primarily liberal, and I'm sure she's a good person and means well, but I have no idea how she can keep track of all the things that she supports.
Yeah.
But it's cats, dogs, unity, peace.
Yeah,
I mean these are good things. The labor movement.
Yeah, pretty crazy. But I mean, but the car looks nuts. Looks like a crazy person owns it.
Yeah. I've actually received an email telling me that it is a crazy person.
Ah, there you go.
This guy.
Speaking of, you know, a car I haven't seen around the city. I used to see it in Andersonville quite a lot. The car with the springs all over it.
Oh, I don't think I know what that is.
Oh no, it's a car that's like it's got a whole bunch of springs glued to it. All over the side, all over the hood, all over the roof, everything.
And I have not seen that car. I need to look that up.
It's been years, but it's a car that somebody just decided that they were going to glue like hundreds of tiny springs all over it. And they drove her mostly. I saw it mostly in Andersonville, and I haven't lived in Andersonville in a very long time, so the car might be off the street. But it was around on the streets for a while.
Huh.
Yeah.
There's a car around Morton Grove that's famous. It's a black Chrysler 300 that has virtually every single accessory you can buy at Pep Boys glued to the outside of it. And we actually watch the progress of that vehicle, and we know what restaurants it's at and what day. But it's hard to get a picture of because the guy wants to pose with the car. It's like, no, I want to make fun of you. I don't.
Yeah. I don't want you to proudly be posing with this thing.
Yeah, this is kind of. And then I feel bad about the whole thing.
Yeah, that's hilarious. All right, you can read Tom Appel and everybody else's stuff at Consumer Guide Automotive. That's consumerguide.com. And check out their blog, too. Lots of fun stuff. You wrote about the car from the Good Omens TV show, too.
Yeah, I did.
We'll get into that. You can read that there. And you can also follow Tom at Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Tom, always a pleasure. Thanks very much, and we'll talk next month.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Okay, buddy, take care. That's Tom Appel, everybody, and he'll join us again next month. News is coming up right after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Tuesday morning. It's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. And who requested the ELO?
That's coming to us from Steve.
Steve wanted to hear some ELO on this 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. All right, we're here till 5. We were just talking cars with Tom Appel, and... from Business Insider, there's this very crazy look at 17 of the strangest cars ever designed. And I don't know, I mean, they're weird. These are just weird-looking cars. The history of automotive design is littered with bold attempts to create vehicles so different in how they look and how they work that they render obsolete everything that's come before. The most daring of these are usually concept cars, which aren't limited to practicality or government regulations and can therefore allow automakers to really push the limits. What happens when creators balance aesthetics, functionality, and their personal vision of the future in is one reason why we love cars. That's especially true when the results leave us wondering, how could anyone think that this was a good idea? And that's precisely what I'm thinking at every picture that I'm seeing here. And I know that... Tom actually has written a similar piece for the blog, for the Daily Drive blog, about, because he loves talking about weird looking cars, and that's a, you know, he goes back and looks at the old consumer guides and tries to find some of the strangest cars from the past that just look really weird. But the 1936 Stout Scarab, this is designer William Stout, who worked as an aircraft engineer before turning to automobiles. He was a pioneer in integrating luxury and leisure into transportation. Stout Airlines is credited with introducing flight attendants and in-flight meals. The Scarab draws on that idea. It's a road-going diner car powered by a Ford V8 tucked in the rear of the stretched aluminum body. Now, the brand never took off, partly because at $5,000, which would be $90,000 today, the Scarab was much more expensive than the Packards and the Cadillac of those days, and fewer than 10 were produced. And the best way to describe this, it does have like a, train kind of a quality to it, and it's very smooth and very very curvy in terms of like there's nothing pointed on this car at all, and there's like. Six windows. I mean,
it kind of looks like it could be a hearse almost.
It's just weird. It's and it's very long. And then does it look to you that there's only one door to get in?
Yeah.
The picture looks like it's a very small driver's side door and that's it. So you have to climb all the way in through that door. Anybody who's going to get into the car, presumably, is going to have to climb through that door and walk into the back part because it's a long car. It's a very long car.
Yeah, and although I do have to say, I like the idea of a diner car like that.
Yeah.
You know, you might have take someone for a drive, then you have your driver and you're in the back having I don't know,
eggs.
Hopefully not soup.
So by the way, the phone lines are open if you want to jump in here. What's the weirdest looking car you've ever seen? What do you think are some of the strangest designed cars of all time? Maybe some of the weirdest cars that you've ever owned that just looked weird. 312-981-7200. Now, this one is from 1942. the OIF Electric. This 1942 OIF Electric, or electric egg, had three wheels and ran on batteries decades after gasoline became a dominant way to power cars. The decades before, Elon Musk decided to make electricity cool again. Its designer was Parisian Paul Arzens. He worked as a painter and designed railway locomotives before moving on to cars. The bubble is made from hand-formed aluminum and curved plexiglass, which was a novel material at the time. And it looks like a bubble. It's predominantly just glass. It's got three wheels. It's very small. It looks like a golf cart. It looks like a weird dome. But it's not. Golf carts are obviously, you know, there's no windows on golf carts. But this is like a windowed dome egg looking golf cart.
Can you imagine a bunch of these driving around Paris?
I mean, this is just another very, very strange looking car. And how long is that steering wheel?
Oh, my God.
Look how long that steering wheel is. And I mean, from the, you know, there's not even a dashboard. It looks like it goes right into the floor.
Yeah. I'm guessing it probably does.
Like the bottom of the steering wheel goes right into the floor and attaches right to the wheels.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I would try it. It kind of looks, it reminds me of kind of like a smart car.
Yeah, but it's, and there's one giant windshield wiper on it, on the top. It's just very weird looking. This is just a very strange looking car.
Oh, you got to keep your windows clean when you're driving your electric egg.
Your electric egg runs on batteries. That's ridiculous. All right, how about the 1947 Norman Timms Special? Now, this one I think is kind of cool, actually. It's a convertible. This is the first of the convertibles that we're seeing. No other automobile looks like the 1947 Norman Timms Special, with its front-mounted cockpit and curves leading to a raindrop tail. The Timms, an Indy racing engineer, made the car with a Buick straight 8 engine placed at the rear of the chassis. Look to racers like the 1937 Auto Union Type C for indications of Timms' inspiration. This is a pretty cool looking car, and it is. It's very smooth. It's very curvy. It looks to me like it's only a one person car, or perhaps a two person car, two seater. I don't know if there doesn't look like there's doors on it, and it's a convertible, but it doesn't look like it has unless they haven't pictured the actual roof that you can put on in case of weather. It doesn't seem to have come with that, but it's very cool, sleekly designed. I think this isn't actually, it's weird, and it's got white walls, and I'm not sure why the back tires have white walls, because they're covered by the body of the car. Like you can barely see the tires, so I'm not really sure why there has to be white walls in the back tires. But overall, I think this is pretty cool.
Yes.
I think it's a pretty cool looking car. It's very strange, but it's pretty cool. The 1947 Norman Timms Special. TIMBS.
Norman Timms.
That's the Norman Timms Special. How about the 1953 General Motors Firebird 1XP21? Now, this looks like a rocket. That's a Firebird?
I guess. It looks like...
I had a Firebird, and it didn't look anything like this. It absolutely looks like a jet plane.
I wonder if you went fast enough, if you could get a little bit off the ground.
To describe today's supercars, we fall back on likening the world of jet fighters. 1953 General Motors Firebird IXP-21 was an actual jet fighter with four wheels, a tail fin, a bubble cockpit. The turbine engine spun up to 26,000 RPM to generate a whopping, for the time, 370 horsepower. It looks exactly like a fighter. So it was. It was a fighter plane. But they called it a Firebird. I mean, it doesn't seem to have any kind of connection to what the Firebird eventually became.
Nope. And just, is this just one person?
I think so. It's a cockpit.
Yeah, get in there.
It's got the dome cockpit. I think it's just you by yourself in your jet. Just driving on the street. Driving on the street in a jet.
Can't pick up girls in that.
No. Jet fighter. Is Tom Cruise able to invert it? That's the only question that I have.
Maverick.
Yeah. Here's Robert on WGN. Hey, Robert.
Good morning, Nicholas. I had a Pace.
A Pace or a Pacer?
I had a, well, it's a Pacer. Yeah, you're right. It is called a Pacer.
Yeah, the AMC just, Pacer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I still have an AMG Javelin, which was very cool. And then this lady said, why don't you buy this off of me for, and it was ridiculously cheap. And it was the most weirdest car I've ever owned.
Yeah, Pacers are weird-looking cars.
And they drive like crap.
Yes, they do. My friend in high school had a Pacer. And,
oh, my God.
My friend in high school had a Pacer. And he was one of the only guys, because some of us weren't driving when we were in high school. I was one of those people. I got my license, but I wasn't driving in high school. I didn't really start driving until I was about 17 or 18 out of high school. But so whenever we went to when we went out and there was the one of the only guys that had a car that we could drive in, we didn't have to take a bus or public transportation, we'd have to cram into this guy's Pacer. So there'd be like eight of us crammed into this ridiculous, Pacer. Just ridiculous.
And a brown one, that's a chick mobile.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah. Now. I'm telling you, we got lucky a lot in the Pacer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. All right, Robert, thanks, man.
Have a good evening. Right,
take
guys.
Care, buddy. Pacer.
I cannot imagine anybody wanting to get in that car.
Into a Pacer?
Into
a brown Pacer? No. It was purely functional.
Yeah,
it was because we didn't want to take a bus. You know what I mean? If you have a chance as a teenager to not take a bus and be driven someplace,
yeah,
you're going to take that opportunity, even if it is in a brown Pacer.
Yeah. Oh, man.
You know, my cousin had it. Here's one to look up on the intranets. Le Car. Le Car. L-E capital C-A-R. Le Car. I don't know what the company... I assume it was French-based. The company was a France-based company. But here's the thing about Le Car. Le Car had the word Le Car plastered on the side of the car, like in giant font. I'm not saying like a little logo on the front or the back of the car. You know, with the name of the car on the back, like on the, you know, on the trunk. Just above the bumper, like normal cars have. This was like, it was like you were driving around. You know those cars that you know where you can drive around in a car or have your car painted or not painted, but covered in a sticker, so you can drive around and advertise a company. That's what it was like, and it said Le Car in big white letters on the side, and it took up almost the entire door, and it was a little. I'm sure you can probably find it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. There's an ad for it. It's a black Le Car, but this is the Le Car van, because I guess it's got a hatchback. So black with a rainbow stripe. It says Le Car van, and the ad literally just says in giant letters, Le Wow.
There you go. Now, is it plastered along the side of the van, the words?
Le Car van, yeah.
Yeah, it's
just
ridiculous.
It takes up a good portion of that door.
Yeah. You're driving around in a car that says Le Car on the side.
It's French for car.
It's ridiculous. My cousin had one, and I was like, what are you doing with this thing? And I think it was her first car. If I'm not mistaken, I think her first car was a Le Car. Might have been for high school graduation. I'm not really sure. I vividly remember that thing, and, you know, Le Car. All right, more weird-looking and weirdly designed cars. I've got a ton here. The strangest cars ever designed from Business Insider is what we're talking about. If you had a weird-looking car or a strange car or a goofy car, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And we're going to get your requests in now. We are talking about some of the most weirdly designed cars of all time. So, and we're talking about some of your past cars, like your terrible cars. 630 area code says, back in the early days, there was a car in the burbs that was completely covered with Loop stickers.
Yeah, man, love the Loop.
Yeah. I don't know what happened to my... I had a bunch of Loop t-shirts. Did I tell you... Did you know I was at Disco Demolition?
Did
I tell you that?
You didn't tell me that.
I was at Disco Demolition.
Wow.
Yeah.
Steve Dahl with the...
Army hat.
Thing.
And the riot, and I split immediately. Like, as soon as the crap hit the fan, my cousins and I were like, let's get the hell out of here now.
Yeah.
It's funny because Dave Hoekstra wrote a book about it with Steve. By the way, it'd be 40th anniversary.
Yeah, that's coming up.
40th anniversary this month.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was there, and it was nuts. It was completely insane. And so it was really scary, actually. Like, when the insanity began, it was really scary.
Yeah, there's been some interesting, mini documentaries on it that kind of look at it from a few different angles.
Yeah.
Where, you know, obviously it is, for better or for worse, a moment in music and baseball history.
Yeah.
But a lot of people were like, yeah, no, that wasn't cool to be part of if you weren't drunk and in the riot.
Well, yeah. I mean, and also the thickness of pot smoke at Comiskey Park that night was just ridiculous.
Must have been 4-5 lids, maybe.
Dave Hoekstra was there as well, because he wrote a book with Steve about it. And we were on completely opposite sides of the field. Like, we were both in the upper deck, but I was in the left field, he was in the right. And we've talked about it before, you know, about what it was like to be there. He stayed longer than I did. Of course, I was younger, so I was like, I got to get out of here. I was 14. I was like, I have to get out of here now.
Meanwhile, Hoekstra, he's just writing down the whole thing.
Yeah, but it was something to be there. I will say that it was something to be there. It's really funny because they've told Dahl this, and he doesn't believe anybody when they say that they were there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the amount of people that come up to Steve Dahl and say, "Yeah, I was at Disco Demolition," you know, what did Comiskey hold? 30,000,
mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. I would wager to say that 500,000 people have told Steve Dahl that they were there.
Exactly.
And so I understand if he doesn't believe me. I totally understand, but I was there.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, people are like, "Oh yeah, dude, I was at Woodstock."
Yeah.
But you have a better... I would say you'd had a better chance of being at Woodstock than you did at actually being at Disco Demolition, yeah. Just numbers-wise.
I brought... because you brought a record to get in. You got in for 98 cents, because at that time, pre-digital, the Loop was 98, not 97.9. And so I brought my parents' soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever. I took it from my parents' record collection. I brought it and I got in for 98 cents. And then they put all the records in the middle of the outfield and blew them up. And that's when all hell broke loose.
You know, Disco Demolition kind of makes me sad. Because I do like disco.
Oh, yeah. Disco is rad. Here's the thing. You know, growing up, I hung out with Burnouts, and I listened to nothing but Zeppelin and Sabbath and stuff like that. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Classic rock, The Loop.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been there.
Way into that stuff, but in the closet, I loved disco. I would never tell my friends that. I would never admit it out loud. I had Disco Sucks t-shirts. I listened to Steve Dahl. I was a member of the Insane Coho Lips army. I was in it 100%. And my favorite kind of music was classic rock, you know, your Sabbath and your Zeppelin and the Rush and all that stuff. But there's no denying, you know, some Disco Inferno. I'm not going to deny that.
No. It slaps, as the kids say.
Yeah. But I had to keep that front up. It's interesting how it's viewed now. It's really interesting now, because it was not in my consciousness when it was happening, but it is many people view it as a homophobic event. Like it was kind of an assault on the gay community. And I don't think that was the intention, but I can certainly understand why people thought that and why people think that now. I have gay friends who just find it to be, you know, they can't even talk about it. And they're like, I can't believe you went to that. And I was like, look, I was 14 years old. You know, I did not have any sort of political beliefs of any kind at that time.
No, it was
and
just
I went because it was
stuff up.
It was, yeah, because they were going to blow stuff up. It was Steve Dahl and I liked rock and roll.
Yeah. But, you know, as a result, we get house music.
Yeah.
So
it's true. It's true. But it's interesting how you can view this in a different lens. And then Hoekstra talks about that a little bit in the book. And it came up. I mean, it'll come up again. It's the 40th anniversary coming up in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you, looking back at it as a homophobic event, is it's kind of a legitimate way to filter it. You know,
yeah.
I don't think that was the intent.
No,
certainly wasn't the intent of me going to it to support mm-hmm. any kind of anti-gay movement of any kind. It was anti-disco. It wasn't anti-gay, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But the disco movement was a massively gay movement.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see, you know, that being interpreted that way. Absolutely.
Yeah. History has many lenses.
Yeah.
History has many lenses.
But it was ridiculous, though. That's why.
Yeah.
Bakery guy says, morning, the TV commercial for the Pacers showed a 6-foot sub being made to show its room. Oh, that's right. Somebody made a giant foot-long sub or a 6-foot sub inside the Pacer to show them. I totally forgot about that, to show how roomy the car was. That's hilarious, Bakery guy. I completely forgot about that.
I gotta see if I can find that.
That's it's hysterical. Wild. I completely forgot about that. Yeah, let's do a 6-foot. Let's assemble a 6-foot sub sandwich in the back seat of a Pacer, just to show how roomy it is. Dino says, "What about the AMC Gremlin? Oh, the Gremlin. The Gremlin, the bastard child of the Pacer." Gremlin. God, I had a guy in high. I knew a friend in high school that had a Gremlin too. I knew somebody with a Pacer and a Gremlin, and my cousin had a LeCar. What's going on?
They were connoisseurs of odd designs.
What is happening? Okay, we'll get back to this article in a minute here because it is the strangest cars ever designed, and we're reminiscing about weird looking cars. And what about some dorky cars that you had that looked bad or that were stupid? 312-981-7200. Has anybody ever assembled a 6-foot sub in the back of a Pacer? That's the real question. All right, the news is coming up after this.
And everybody's heard about the bird.
I think of two things when I hear this song. One, Full Metal Jacket. Two, Family Guy. That's immediately what comes to mind. First thing comes to mind is Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, yeah. But that Family Guy bit.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
It's hilarious. That and the chicken, when the chicken fight, whenever they do the chicken fist fight.
I'm not kidding. My dad used to watch every single night on Channel 9 on WGN TV. They would show at least two Family Guys. And he'd watch it every single night. It would be reruns all the time. It would be the same ones. But he always laughed at that chicken thing.
The chicken thing is hilarious.
It's amazing.
And it just goes on forever.
Well, I like that they reference famous fights.
Yeah.
Like they do the bit from Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
It gets in the propeller.
Yeah. Classic. I also love the fact that on South Park, Trey and Matt, like almost frame for frame, perfectly recreated the fight between Roddy Piper and David Keith. So, Keith David.
Keith, yeah, I was going to say.
David Keith is the other guy. David Keith was in Officer and Gentleman. Right. Okay. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio, who requested that?
So, that was coming to us from the 773.
773 area code. All right.
Little Two trash for Tuesday. Man.
Yeah. We are talking about weirdly designed cars. And this article showcases some of the strangest looking cars I've ever seen. And that it's also got us reminiscing about some of the stupid cars that we had or weird looking cars that were on the streets. 815 area code says on the Pink Panther cartoons, it was called Le Heap. The old Le Car. 708 area code says, most fun car I had as a teenager was the Opel GT. It looked like a little vet, four-cylinder car that was a blast to drive. 262 area code, check out the Rinspeed Splash. So cool. What does it look like?
So the Rinspeed Splash, from what I could gather, is this weird blue car that also functions as a speedboat.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
They've got videos. It kind of looks like a race car, almost like an Indy car, but it goes on the water and it can
That's crazy.
Slightly function as a speedboat.
Wow, that's crazy. That's some James Bond stuff right there. Let's see. 630 area code says the HCD1 1991 Hyundai, very cool to me only. And let's see. I will never understand cars that look like refrigerators. Also, why they removed all the personality from the cars after the 70s. No matter what manufacturer, they all look alike with boring colors. They also took cars like the Cougar, the Riviera, the Cutlass, etc., rolled them and turned them into cigars on wheels. Such a shame. Can't tell half of them apart anymore. Strange-looking car is the Avante. Thanks for being you, Nick. That's from Linz. Thank you, Linz.
I agree on the color part. Yeah. Most cars are pretty much some variation of gray or silver, black.
Yeah.
And then maybe you get like a deep red.
724 area code says, one of my first vehicles was an 81 Buick Skylark. Oh my God, how much gas mileage were you getting on that thing? Had all the sleek sex appeal of a concrete block, but I still tried to soup it up. I like trying to customize a shoebox. Yeah, the Skylark. Not a very good looking car, man. The Skylark, not a very good looking car. Good morning. My parents had a Chevy Chevette for a couple of years. Ugly.
Engineer Adam had a Chevette.
Is that right?
Yeah. He told me once that he would go pick up chicks and be like, hey, you want to see my vet?
Yeah, there you go. 630 area code says, one night I'm driving my parents' 77 Vega, four-cylinder automatic. I was stopped facing uphill behind a Yugo with a manual transmission. He was trying to get started, turn left, but he couldn't do it once. He was just about to succeed, and the car was going the other way. It lost patience and went, so the Yugo had to stop again. At one point, he rolled back and just tapped my bumper. I really wish I had then pushed him enough to make sure that it was his turn to go, but I'm not sure the Vega could have done it. Push the poor guy. All right. How about the Chrysler Streamlined X Gilda? The 1955 Chrysler Streamlined X Gilda got its name from the... Well, are you kidding me? From the 1947 Rita Hayworth movie. After foregoing a planned jet turbine engine, Italian firm GIA outfitted the Gilda with a plain 1.5-liter engine made for touring. The design was a short run for Chrysler's turbine cars. And they've got some crazy fins on this car. This looks like a bullet.
Honestly, especially with this paint job with the red, white, and blue, I think it looks like the Mach 5.
It does kind of look like
Mach
5.
Looks a little bit
I'm looking at this. I have this in black and white, so I can't see the colors because I'm looking at a printout of it. But it does, yeah, it does resemble the Mach 5. But the fins are cool.
I'd drive it. I'd give it a shot.
How about the 1970 Ferrari Pininfarina 512 S Modulo? What the hell is that? What is that? That is the weirdest looking thing I've ever seen. Design firm Pininfarina has produced more famous car works, but the Ferrari 512 S Modulo car, which is created for the 1970 Geneva Motor Show, doesn't aim for beauty. Designer Paolo Martin put the bizarre body on the chassis of a Ferrari 512S race car. That is real. I don't even know how to describe this. It looks like a spaceship.
It does.
And I don't know how. It's very low to the ground.
It almost looks like it doesn't have wheels. Like it just kind of glides.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, it looks like a spaceship. It looks like a UFO of some kind, and it's very flat and weird looking. That's one of the weirdest ones I've seen. How about the 1970 Lancia Bertone Stratus HF0? Well, I think this looks cool. This looks like a Batmobile.
Mm-hmm. A very slim Batmobile.
And sleek.
Mm.
This 1970 is a concept that led to the seminal Lancia Stratus, just 33 inches tall. Wow, the concept was so short, drivers had to enter through a hinged wing windshield. He had to enter through a windshield in this car. I think it looks pretty cool, though. But I'd be terrified in that thing if it's that low to the ground. Yeah, I mean, you're basically laying down inside this car. That's not a way I would like to drive. Looks pretty cool, though. Weird conceptually. The 2001 BMW Gina Light Visionary model. This is weird. This has got like it's got almost like not really like DeLorean doors, but they are doors that open out and up. But they're not winged like the Back to the Future car.
Yeah, they kind of open forward.
They forward, but they're designed, it looks like they're going up, but I think that's just the shape of the door. The 2001 BMW Gina Light Visionary model concept came from BMW design director Chris Bangle, famous for upsetting the German automaker's design standbys with hard geometry and chunky body parts. Here, he covered the car's exterior in polyurethane-coated spandex that would shift the car's aerodynamic needs at the time. That's just weird.
It kind of looks like if you scared the car, that's what it would do. It'd just open up.
Yeah. That's a strange-looking car right there. No question about it. Polyurethane-coated spandex? What?
That's what I use for my pants.
What's going on? The Porsche 918 Spyder concept car. This is pretty cool.
I think that looks like a pretty regular car.
Yeah, it's not bad. The wheels are a little weird. This one doesn't seem that strange to me. This looks like a pretty uniquely designed sports car. The Porsche 918 Spyder concept car was unveiled at the 2010 Geneva Motor Show and led to the hybrid supercar Porsche on the road today. The concept was an evolution of the Carrera GT that precedes it with added electric motors in the front and rear axles, producing a combined 218 horsepower. Those, of course, were supplemented by a 500 horsepower 3.4-liter V8. So the car could move, too. Yeah, this one does. I mean, this one seems very weirdly sort of stylish, but it doesn't look like a rocket like some of these other cars. All right, here's Big Ed. Go ahead, Ed.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Yeah.
Before I get to my car store, I just wanted to tell you that your dad's guacamole.
Yeah.
That was a great joke.
Yeah, that made everybody on the 18th floor yesterday morning laugh out loud. Everybody.
It made me laugh, too.
Yeah.
Okay, my car story. That boat car, you know?
Yeah.
I forget the name of it. Lyndon Johnson had one of those.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, and he had it on his ranch. And what he used to do was, he'd get people in that car, and he'd be driving it towards a lake, and then he'd go, oh, I don't have any brakes, and he'd drive right into the lake, and these people were going crazy. He just got the biggest kick out of scaring the hell out of them.
Wow. All right.
So there's a presidential boat car.
All right, Ed, thanks.
Take care, Nick.
Who knew LBJ was a prankster? I think Lyndon B. Johnson, I don't think prankster. That's not... But he's scaring the hell out of people driving into lakes and stuff. Yeah. All right, how about the 1935 Bugatti Type 57S Competition? I think this is a very cool-looking car.
It's very futuristic for 1935.
I think this is a pretty cool-looking car. The original example of the 1935, which debuted at the Paris Auto Show in 1935, was lost after the unveiling. Uh-oh. The popular explanation is that Bugatti disassembled it for parts to make the Type 57 production car that followed. The model on display is a recreation produced in 2007 based on recorded specs, photographs, and an oil painting by a Bugatti engineer. It's got that swooped back end, and the front end looks like a it's hard to describe what this thing looks like, but it's very cool looking, and it's a two seater. And it looks like the doors open outward, but you got to climb in.
Like you're very sitting back in that though.
Yeah. Well, that seemed to be a thing here. Where I'm looking at some of these cars, and like there's a couple of those ones that are really really low to the ground that you're virtually laying in as you're driving. That's not something I want to do.
No, that freaked me out.
Yeah. 1932 Ford Speedster. See, I think this is a cool-looking car, too.
That's...
I think this is a very cool-looking car. The 1932 Ford Speedster packing a flathead V8 engine came with a starter button decades before the feature became standard in automotive fare. The long, low roadster was the brainchild of Henry's son, Edsel Ford. The designer was Eugene Gregory. I think it's really cool. It's very boxy and weird, but it's got the big fat white walls too, which I enjoy.
Yeah, very of the time. Yeah. Very of the time.
Yeah, I like that one. Okay, we were talking about some of the weirdest and strangest cars ever designed, and reminiscing about some of your old cars. If you got car stories, or you had a really stupid car at some point in your life, 312-981-7200, or just in general weird looking cars. And then we're going to jump into some music stuff and movie stuff, because on this date in 1977, Gonna Fly Now, the theme from Rocky, was the number one song on the charts. So we're going to go back and talk about and maybe listen to a little bit of some of the best and most memorable movie theme songs of all time. So there you go. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll be back after this. I'm going to shake your shoulders and a movie your feet. We're going to stomp to the front dance beat. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. All right, we've been talking about some weird cars, weirdly designed cars. There's this article here that's just filled with pictures and weird cars, and we're talking about some of our car memories. Here's a few texts. 847 area code says, this is from JB, says, Nick, what was the name of the car Homer Simpson created? I just can't remember what he called it, but his brother put him out of business. That was, I can't remember the name of the car either, but that was Danny DeVito played his, was it Danny DeVito who played his brother?
I'll have to check.
But, yeah, I do remember. I forgot what the car was that Homer Simpson created. We'll have to look that up. 630 area code says, my first car was a 1990 Geo Metro 5-speed manual. Not the greatest car, but I could fill up the tank for less than $10. Not today. Um, 262 area code, my favorite car has always been from the 70s, the Pantera, where the doors flip up like wings.
Mm. So the name of Homer's car was the Homer.
Oh, that's right.
And it was Danny DeVito played his brother Herb.
Right.
In Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? That's the name of the episode.
Right. The Homer. That was the name of the car. Is there a picture of what the Homer looked like?
Yes. So
can you describe it?
Yeah, it's like a big green sort of 50s style thing, kind of like an old Chevy. It's got the engine block coming out of the top. There's a giant siren on the top of it. And like kind of like a Bentley, you know, on the front, how it has like the little hood ornament.
Yeah.
It's got that too. Some steps on the side to help you get into the car.
Oh, that's
good. Lime green.
Lime green. The Homer. Never took off with the kids. Susan says, in the late 60s, my sister... Linda drove my parents' Rambler, and when she shifted, parts fell out of the inside of the car. That's not a good sign when parts are falling out from inside the car. You might want to have that looked at.
Yeah, I think I got a guy. I got a guy that might be able to look at that.
Yeah. Parts falling out of the car. All right, how about the 1934 Voisin C25 Aerodyne. Oh, well, now this is a cool-looking car. This looks like something Dracula would drive, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, 100%.
Oh, I think it's cool. Yeah. It does. It looks like something that the Penguin would drive in Batman Returns.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Speaking of Danny DeVito, this one I think is my favorite of all the cars that we've got here in this article. I like the front end a lot. I like the design. It's a four-door. Like many of his peers on this list, designer Gabriel Voisin started off making airplanes. After World War I, he turned to cars. Only 28 of the 1934 Voisin C-25 Aerodynes were made, one of which won Best in Show at the 2011 Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance. That's a damn cool-looking car. The 1948 Tasco. What the hell is this? What is this? Okay, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Looks like a bread box. Not a car. Certainly doesn't look like a car. The 1948 Tasco was made under a short-lived brand called the American Sports Car Company. The car's name was an acronym for the manufacturer. Gordon Buehrig, formerly of Duesenberg, took design inspiration from World War II fighter planes. The fiberglass covering on the front wheels moved with the steering input. That's just weird. That's just really, really weird. So, you know, I've been to some of the, you know, out in the suburbs, sometimes they'll have like impromptu shows, like usually at like outdoor restaurants or drive-ins or something like that. And people just show up with their classic cars and park them, put the hood up, you know, and people walk around. Well, my ex-wife has one of my favorite kind of cars in the world. She has a 77 El Camino.
Ooh.
And loved that car. Loved it. It's pretty amazing driving around in that thing. The 77 El Camino. It was amazing. And she still has it. I just, you know, I ask her once in a while, you know, if she still got it. She lives in Oregon now, so she doesn't have to put it away for the winter.
Oh, that's nice.
Because she used to have to put it away here in Chicago. Yeah, yeah. She'd have to put it away for the winter. I drove the thing a few times. It's so good. Don't tell anybody I drove it because I haven't had a license in a long time. But that car was badass. It's still amazing. And El Caminos are like you want to talk about a weird looking car. Is it a truck? Is it a car? I don't know what the hell it is. But I think El Caminos are awesome.
Yeah, it's business up front, party in the back.
I love
the mullet of cars.
I love the El Camino. Anytime there's an El Camino spotted in anything, I always have to text my ex-wife and say, hey, I just watched TV. Like, I was watching Halloween 3 Season of the Witch one night, and there's an El Camino in the beginning of the movie. And so I took a screenshot of it. And I was like, you probably need to watch Halloween 3, Season of the Witch again. And she's like, oh, that's a cool El Camino. And I'm like, yeah.
It's a good Camino.
And not only a cool El Camino, but the movie rules.
Good old Tom Atkins.
I love that movie. I love that movie. And it took a long time for people to love that movie. Long time. It's got a great cult following now, but man, I remember seeing that movie the night it opened.
People were ticked.
Oh my God. Oh my God. One, it's not it's not connected to Michael Myers in any way. Two, it's a really goofy movie. Three, it's awesome. Four, it ends with a, you know how it ends.
Yeah.
People were mad. That's the second maddest I've ever seen an audience. The maddest I've ever seen an audience where they started throwing stuff at the screen was after the screen... was after a radio station sponsored, WGCI radio station sponsored screening of Brian De Palma's Raising Kane. People went nuts.
What year was that?
92.
Was GCI hip hop at that time? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they were soul and not so much, mm-hmm. They played hip hop, but it was mostly like R&B, mm-hmm. soul. And I'm telling you, I've never seen an audience so mad. And I happen to think Raising Kane's a masterpiece. I happen to think it's great. So I was fine. I was happy as hell.
Everyone else throwing stuff at the screen.
Same thing with Halloween 3. I was pleased at the end of Halloween 3. My friends, everybody else in the theater. Yeah. But no, that's the most angry. Second most angry I've ever seen a theater, Halloween 3. Most angry, Raising Kane. There was almost a riot after Raising Kane. I'm telling you, man.
But it was free, man.
And then Kim, it's also a great movie. And, yeah. And Lithgow's unbelievable in that movie. Oh, boy, people hated it. All right, we have to break here. We have the news coming up, and then after the news, on this date in 1977, the number one song in the country, believe it or not, was Gonna Fly Now from Rocky, and we're going to talk about some great movie-themed songs from movies after we take a break for the news, which is coming up right now. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And, yeah, so it's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. So who requested that?
So that's coming to us from Joliet Mike, a double double dose of Harold Faltermeyer.
Harold Faltermeyer. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what his other hit would have been, because that's obviously Axel F. Well, would it be Fletch? It. Because he did the music for Fletch.
I know, yeah. No, it is not Fletch. I will say that.
Okay.
You'll know it when you hear it.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. And so the number one song in the country on this date in 1977 was Gonna Fly Now. And it's hard to believe that you know, boy, that was as big a hit as it was. Because I mean, first of all, the movie really took off.
It's just one of those anthems that everybody knows.
Yeah,
I know there are plenty of people who have never seen Rocky. Never actually sat down and watched it. But if you play it, they're like, oh, yeah, it's a Rocky theme.
Yeah. Who hasn't seen Rocky?
You'd be younger people.
Come on now.
Hey, you know, if it's not on Netflix, which it might be on Netflix.
Oh, man. But... Yeah, you got to see Rocky. The hell is wrong with people? But it's just an unusual song to be, you know, the number one hit in the country. But radio was different then. They played a ton of different types of music on one station. Everything wasn't, you know, there was a lot more variety in the pop, you know, world.
It wasn't so formatted.
Right, exactly. And also, instrumentals and movie themes were popular. So here's what they say. On this day in 1977, Hollywood composer Bill Conti scores a number one pop hit with the single Gonna Fly Now, the theme from Rocky. Bill Conti was a relative unknown in Hollywood when he began working on Rocky, but so was Sylvester Stallone. Conti had gained some attention internationally for his work on several early 70s Italian films, and Stallone had starred in a small film called The Lords of Flatbush, played various minor roles on TV and in movies. It was Rocky that would truly launch both men's careers. The film was Stallone's from the start to finish, but it's difficult to overstate the importance of his collaboration with Conti. Though Conti took his inspiration from Stallone's footage, Stallone had the film's critical training and fight sequences edited to fit Conti's music, and the interaction between picture and music in Rocky made an enormous contribution to the film's success. The single Gonna Fly Now takes its name from the almost superfluous 30 words of lyric and written by Ann Robbins and former teddy bear Carol Connors. Though it lost the competition of Best Original Song, the 49th Academy Awards, to Barbra Streisand and Paul Williams' Evergreen, the love theme from Star is Born, which is a great song. It has remained an instantly recognizable piece of American pop culture. In the years since the release of Rocky, Sylvester Stallone has continued to churn out action flicks, and Bill Conti has built a hugely successful career as a composer for film and television, a career that eventually included an Academy Award for Best Original Score for the 1983 film The Right Stuff. Oh, wow, he did The Right Stuff? That's a fantastic score. Great score. But yeah, so it was number one, Gonna Fly Now on this date. And there are a lot of songs that are themes from movies that we're going to go through here, including Evergreen. Yeah, Paul Williams, man. One of the greatest songwriters of all time. My mom loves Paul Williams, like loves him, and has all of his albums. He's written a lot of songs for other people.
Sure.
You know, he sings himself, but he's written a lot of songs for other people. That's what he's best known for. Like, he's written a bunch of songs for Three Dog Night. He wrote songs for Barbara Streisand. He writes songs for a ton of people. And he wrote the songs for Ishtar, which makes him a genius. And so there was a documentary that they made about Paul Williams. I want to say maybe 10 years ago. And I interviewed him. He came in and I interviewed him. And I brought my mom down. She brought all her albums. He signed all of them, took pictures with her. My mom was beside herself. And I love Paul Williams for many, many reasons. He's in Phantom of the Paradise, which...
Classic.
I mean, what are you going to... And he wrote the music to that, too. And I just think he's a great performer. He used to be, you know, a staple on late-night talk shows, Johnny Carson. He was on Match Game. He did all the game show circuit.
The Muppets.
He wrote It Ain't Easy Being Green. I mean, come on, man! He's written some of the greatest songs of all time. Like, truly, he's one of the greatest songwriters that's ever lived.
Yeah, I mean, with the Muppets, the one I always thought of him for was Rainbow Connection.
Yeah, Rainbow Connection, he wrote that, too. Yeah.
Is one of the most sweetly beautiful little songs that anybody's ever written.
I mean, he's written some of the most beautiful songs, seriously, some of the best songs of all time. And when I had him in studio, I was very excited because, you know, he's an amazing... He's also Little Enos in the Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah.
Movies.
Yeah.
Him and Pat McCormick, Big Enos, Little Enos. You know, when I had him on, I was really, I spent so much time, he was taken aback because I spent so much time talking about Ishtar. Like I would say half the interview was me talking about Ishtar.
I think a lot of people would be taken aback, Nick.
And,
I'm not kidding.
Because he's proud of the work that he did on Ishtar.
Sure.
Nobody likes that movie except me, and I think it's brilliant. And so, I just said, you know, we have to talk about the songs in Ishtar because they're just genius. And he said it was the hardest thing he ever to do because he was attempting to write bad songs. Like, it was much harder for him not to try and write a good song, but to write bad, because the songs in Ishtar are hilarious. They're ridiculous. And and so he was just like, "Boy, you really liked Ishtar." Like, he was like taking. He was like, "I'm like, yeah, I think Ishtar's brilliant."
Hold on, I gotta call the studio here.
I think it's brilliant. I think Elaine May is a great filmmaker, and it's an unfairly maligned movie, and it's really funny, and the songs are great. So yeah, I spent a lot of time talking about Ishtar, and so yeah. But anyway, that's Paul Williams. He wrote songs for movies as well, and Evergreen is one of them. My mom saw that movie. My mom saw the 1976 version of Star Is Born like 800 times. Like, she saw it like
I love it.
She saw it like 800 times.
It's her and Chris Christopherson.
Yeah,
right?
Barbara Streisand, that's, Chris Christopherson. Yeah. And as a result, you know, like, I've seen it a bunch of times, and that soundtrack. Well, that's the, like. It's a soundtrack that it is forever attached to my youth. And I know every song. I know every song and every lyric of every song on that soundtrack. And Paul Williams wrote a lot of them. So, but yeah. And my mom last year when Star Is Born came out, when the Bradley Cooper Gaga version came out, she was like, So she was just like raising her eyebrow, like, how dare you? And it was because, you know, of all of the other versions of A Star Is Born, Bradley Cooper clearly, his takeoff was from the 76 version with Barbara Streisand and Chris Christopherson, and that was the one that was most influenced. That's the one that most influenced him in his version of it. And so my mom was being a little bit leery. Yeah, you know, she was like, "Well, we'll see, Mr. Cooper. We'll see if you've made a better movie than Barbara made." Apparently, Chris Christopherson and Barbara Streisand hated each other. I can imagine. Hate each other on the set because she's really controlling. Mm-hmm. Frank Pearson's got the directing credit on it, but he didn't direct it. And Robert Englund's in it.
That he is.
Yeah, he's got one scene in it. And he's hilarious in it.
Do you think for flashback, if I brought him a copy of that on DVD, he'd sign it?
Oh, he'd sign it. He absolutely would sign it. I've interviewed him, and I talked about that movie with him.
Is he proud of it?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
He said, you know, he was only in one scene. He's in the scene where Christofferson just drunkenly shows up at the bar where the Oreos are singing.
Yeah.
And, you know, she goes, "You're ruining my act, man." But he's, you know, like arguing with him. Robert Englund was arguing with him because, you know, he recognizes him and he wants to get a picture and an autograph and stuff. He's like, "No, man, I just want to watch the, I'll just shut up so I can hear the song." That's Robert Englund who's harassing.
And after that harassment, he became a cold-blooded killer.
Yeah. I think he became an alien first, though, in V.
Oh, Christ. Was he in V?
Yeah, man. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was a year and a half before Nightmare.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's been in a ton of stuff, man. Yeah. I mean, Robert Englund's credits go way back. I mean, he's been in a ton of classic movies. Like, if you go back, he's got small roles in a lot of big movies.
Is it weird that one of my favorite roles outside of Freddy Krueger for him is as the leader of the undead Confederates in 2001 Maniacs?
No, he's great in that.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he's great in that. He's got so many great stories, man. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like I said, he's been in a lot of classic movies. He's worked with a ton of people. And he's got stories. I mean, I've had him on the show a few times, and it's every time we have him on, it's a new story. Like, I don't think he's going to be able to tell a new story, but he does. So, he's worked with a lot of great directors, and he was in Ford Fairlane. So, right there. He was in Ford Fairlane because of his relationship with Harlan.
Of course, yeah.
So, they did Nightmare together. All right, here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
Good.
Yeah, this is definitely has to be the number one catchy theme song because still to this day, it's still catchy today, even in pop culture recently, of course. Now, of course, you know where I'm going with this, Ghostbusters.
Yeah, Ghostbusters, or I Want a New Drug, whichever one you want to refer to. But yeah, no, I mean, the Ghostbusters theme is iconic and to this day, you know, so yeah, absolutely. All right, Ike, thanks, man.
No problem.
Yep, and they play it like 800 times in the movie. I didn't realize that until my screening a few weeks ago. They play it like 4 times in the movie.
Well, because there's buy the single. Yeah.
I have it already. It's I Want a New Drug. I have it at home.
Ray Parker Jr.
Ray Parker lawsuit. Here's Bill on WGN. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, Nick, I'm going to take you back to some movies that had songs in them or the themes of movies that became proper song back then. Also was like, well, the Pat Boone, April Love, Friendly Persuasion, Summer Place, theme from Picnic.
Yeah.
You had High Noon theme song, Magnificent Seven. All those were popular songs at their time back
yeah.
then.
Yeah, they played
the heck out of them.
Yep, they did. Those were all classic. All right, Bill, thanks.
Okay.
There's a bunch of them right there. All right, why don't we take a break? We'll come back. I'll dive right into this. This is from youdiscovermusic.com. If you want to read the entire article, it's up on our Facebook page, which is why you should like our Facebook page and be on it and check it out. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the best film theme songs of all time. What are your favorites? The best film theme songs of all time. Music from movies. So 80s, my God. Top Gun. That's the one, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I always think of when I think of Harold Faltermeyer.
I think of Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the first thing I think of. I always forget that the Top Gun even had a score.
Well, because you just think Danger Zone?
Yeah. I don't know. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're talking about the best film theme songs. And I'm looking at this piece that's at youdiscovermusic.com. I got it in front of me, and they're in chronological order, going all the way back to 1934. So they start in chronological order. Let's see. Here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I graduated from high school in 71, and there was a little Clint Eastwood movie in 71 called Play Misty for Me.
Yep.
And the song, First Time Ever I Saw Your Face by Roberta Flack.
Yep. It's a great song, and it's weird, too, because it kind of the whole movie just kind of stops just for that, so they could play that song.
Yeah. And then within a year or two of that, she did Killing Me Softly.
Yeah.
Hey, can I throw another one at you?
Sure.
Actually, an honorable mention. My brother loved two movies in one. Movie with George C. Scott.
Oh, man. I haven't seen that in years.
It just shows to go.
Yeah.
But while I was on the hold, I was thinking of Born to Be Wild, Easy Rider.
Sure. That's legendary.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Doc, thanks,
man.
All right.
Another great topic.
Thank you. So, yeah. So here's what they got. They got Blue Moon from Manhattan Melodrama from 1934, and that's been covered so many times. Dean Martin, Ella Fitzgerald, Elvis Presley. It is a classic song. Cheek to Cheek from Top Hat, 1935. Again, that song is just it's been a classic. That's in the Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers movie, Dancing Cheek to Cheek. Old Man River from Showboat, 1936. It's the 1936 film version by Paul Robeson with his baritone voice and edgier interpretation that took the song to a whole new level. Can't have this discussion without talking about Somewhere Over the Rainbow from The Wizard of Oz, 1939. That, of course, has been covered many, many times, including Flaming Lips.
When did they do?
It's a staple of their live shows. But it's a staple of their. I've seen Flaming Lips like four or five times. They've played it every time I've seen them. So, but Somewhere Over the Rainbow. These are all iconic and classic. Here is Frank on WGN. Hi, Frank.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, Nick?
Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking of the one when Frank Sinatra did a duet. It ain't easy being green with Kermit. That was really cool.
Yeah, well, It Ain't Easy Being Green is from the Muppet Movie. And then it became sort of a staple elsewhere. And we were just talking about it because Paul Williams wrote it.
Yes. And who that fellow who called two callers ago mentioned a whole bunch of those big themes like from Westerns. Who was that that wrote those?
Who was it?
I can't remember. I didn't catch that part. I just walked back into the room.
Well, no, I mean, he rattled off about seven titles that were not all written by the same people.
Oh, yeah, okay, like Hugo Montenegro
Morricone. Yeah.
But I was going to mention something before, but I was so close to the news time, I couldn't get it in, which is, you were talking about the El Camino?
Yeah.
And that's, they call it the Roadrunner, El Camino, the Spanish people. And it's, they call them Cota Camino. But the Camino, the El Camino Chevy or the Ford Ranchero are known as the Cowboy Cadillac.
Right. Right. Yeah, the Ranchero is another one. Ranchero is another one that's very similar looking to the El Camino. I prefer the El Camino to the Ranchero, but yeah, that's exactly right. All right, Frank, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. How about When You Wish Upon a Star from Pinocchio?
Oh, my God.
1940.
So good.
Cliff Edwards, a middle-aged singer known as Ukulele Ike, voices the crow in Dumbo, but his voice is better known for singing the wonderfully sentimental When You Wish Upon a Star for the Disney classic Pinocchio. The song was written by two giants of film music, Lee Harline, who wrote Whistle While You Work, and Ned Washington, who wrote High Noon. Their song for Edwards became a jazz standard, covered by Dave Brubeck and Louis Armstrong, among others. And a recent version by Gregory Porter is featured on the Verve album Jazz Loves Disney. Yeah, When You Wish Upon a Star. How can you not love that? We got some texts here that are coming in. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. 301 area code says, 1977, you had the theme from The Spy Who Loved Me, Nobody Does It Better. That same year was the theme from Smokey and the Bandit, Eastbound and Down. That's a couple of classics right there. Yeah, I mean, geez, the Bond movies.
You could do a list of just those.
Yeah, I mean, the Bond movies, you know, some of them are great, some of them suck. Mm-hmm. I mean, I personally, my favorite Bond song mm-hmm. is Live and Let Die.
Yeah, that's a must.
That's my favorite.
But I have a weird affinity for, I hate the movie Quantum of Solace. I think it's a total trash fire of a picture.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
But the theme song is awesome.
Who did it?
It was Jack White and Alicia Keys.
Oh, okay.
Another Way to Die.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I loved it.
I don't remember anything about Quantum of Solace. I barely remember anything.
Consider yourself lucky.
I I'm the only person on the planet that didn't like Skyfall.
Oh, you didn't like Skyfall?
No. Albert Finney was the only thing in the movie I liked.
Oh, I was big into Skyfall. And I'm huge. I think, to me, I know it's blasphemy, I think the best Bond movie is Casino Royale.
It's up there. It's up there. I mean, Goldfinger is, I think,
That's like the first true Bond movie. Like, you watch Dr. No and From Russia with Love, and they're like, yeah, they have some of the elements, but Goldfinger is.
That's the one I always go to. If someone was like, hey, what's your favorite Bond movie? I usually go right to Goldfinger. Yeah. Mark from Lake Villa says, the movie To Live and Die in L.A. had a good song and a good soundtrack. Wang Chung, man.
Mm-hmm.
Great score.
William Friedkin expressly asked them not to title the song or use the lyric To Live and Let Die. To Live and Die in L.A. And then they absolutely just did that.
And it's a great song.
It's massive.
And
so
the
good.
Soundtrack is so good.
Mm-hmm. It's part of the reason I watched the movie, honestly.
Oh, I love that movie. I think it's great.
The soundtrack takes it to a different place.
Yeah. They never did any more scores, Wang Chung. That's the only score they ever did, which is weird. Because it's such a great score. But yeah, To Live and Die in L.A. So when you first saw that movie, how shocked were you when his face got blown off with a shotgun?
Dude, I can't even. I kind of wanted to cry. I was really upset. Because I only ever knew him as Grissom. I was like, they killed Grissom, from CSI.
Yeah, that was his first movie.
I know. That was a big one. Because Friedkin pretty much pulled him straight out of theater.
Right here.
He was doing theater, yeah.
Yeah. And I saw that movie at an advanced screening, and it was filled with Chicago theater people. And when his face got blown off, the whole place went nuts. It was ridiculous.
I flipped out.
Vic and I have talked about that in the past, about the...
To Live and Die in L.A.
Oh, yeah, that moment in To Live and Die in L.A., right, Vic?
Because that's William Peterson, mm-hmm, yep. Yeah.
When they blow William Peterson's face off in To Live and Die in L.A. I mean, my God.
I mean, I must have seen that 30 years ago. I still remember that scene.
Yeah.
See, like, that and Manhunter pretty much got him the role on CSI.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Manhunter. It's the only Thomas Harris thing I like, except for the TV show Hannibal, which I loved. Okay, we got a break here. The news is coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, 2 for Tuesday. You made 2 for Tuesday. Who requested that?
So that's Leon Bridges, requested by Cindy.
Okay. All right. We'll hear another Leon Bridges song coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text and your 2 for Tuesday requests. We got some texts here and we got some phone calls. We are talking about the best film theme songs of all time. In honor of the fact that Gonna Fly Now was the number one song in the country back in 1977 on this date. And there have been some really, really iconic and classic movie theme songs that have gone on to be big hits and iconic songs. And I'm looking at this article, and they're in chronological order. We'll get back to that in a second, but we do have some people on the phone. And here's Roosevelt on WGN. Hi, Roosevelt.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
Thank you for my call.
Yeah.
The one that comes to mind is... you guys were mentioning early 70s, and I went a little bit further back, and that is Amen, Lilies of the Field, and, of course, To Sir with Love, both of them with Sidney Poitier.
Right.
And as far as honorable mention, you were mentioning, or you guys are talking about 007. I particularly like the Casino Royale theme with Chris Cornell.
Yeah.
He did a fantastic job on that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I thought that was great, too. I enjoyed that one very much. Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, Roosevelt, thanks, man.
Thank you.
Here's Paula on WGN. Hi, Paula.
Hi. You got great. I love this stuff. Okay, how about King of Them All, Henry Mancini, Moon River.
Yeah.
And If You're Feeling Fancy Free, Wander Through the World with Audie Hepburn and Albert Finney and Two for the Road and the Pink Panther and, Atari. I mean, it goes on and on.
Yeah, no, Henry Mancini obviously has done some of the classic songs and classic scores in movies and television history. There's no question about it. Absolutely.
Peter Gunn. Oh,
yeah, gosh. Of course. Of course. Absolutely.
Oh, An Experiment in Terror.
Of course. That's the theme from Creature Features.
Yeah, your favorite.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Paula, thank you.
Good night. Yep,
Henry Mancini. 331 area code says, my favorite song from a James Bond movie is Shirley Bassey with Goldfinger. Classic. 773. Oh, it's Mike from Novak Construction. Great movie songs include Shaft from the movie Shaft and The Morning After from Poseidon Adventure. I believe that won the Oscar. The Poseidon Adventure. I believe there's got to be a Morning After. 773 area code says the theme from Shaft is one of the best movie themes, which Isaac Hayes won an Oscar. And yeah, if you haven't seen that performance that Isaac Hayes puts on at the Academy Awards the year that Shaft was nominated, it's pretty spectacular. You should go back and see it. It's the most un-Oscar-like performance that you could have, especially at that time period, the early 70s. Victor says, Live and Let Die, by far the best ever. Okay, how about Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy from Buck Pirates? That's Brooke Privates. That's Abbott and Costello movie. Here's a legendary one, As Time Goes By from Casablanca. So, can you hear a little bit of that? Can we hear a little bit of As Time Goes By from Casablanca?
Of course. Here's a little bit of that.
Is just a sign. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you. All that you can rely.
Now, the thing was that this was actually written by Herman Hupfeld for a short-lived 30s Broadway musical called Everybody's Welcome. So it was actually not written for, it wasn't written originally for Casablanca. It was written for this Everybody's Welcome, this Broadway musical. But it took on a, you know, obviously it took on a life of its own once they used it in Casablanca. So, and we got a few Christmas ones here. White Christmas from Holiday Inn, which of course is a standard now. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas from Meet Me in St. Louis.
Really not that trolley song?
No. and Baby, It's Cold Outside from Neptune's Daughter, which I find a relatively creepy song.
I mean, many radio stations agreed, apparently, this past holiday season.
I find it to be a pretty creepy song. All right, here's James on WGN. Hi, James.
Morning, Nick. How are you doing?
All right.
Is Curtis Mayfield's Superfly soundtrack, is that on the list?
Well, if it's not, it should be.
And one more, the Cooley High soundtrack.
Yeah, Cooley High had a lot of great songs on the soundtrack, no question about
it. Yeah, especially G.C. Cameron's It's So Hard to Say Goodbye, which has been redone 3 or 4 times.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's been covered several times. So, all right, James, thanks, man.
Yeah. All right, thanks a lot.
Superfly.
The Flies.
And Pusher Man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can't Curtis Mayfield, man.
Trouble Man with Marvin Gaye.
Yeah. Here's Laura on WGN. Hi, Laura.
Hey, Laura. Hi, Nick. How's it going?
Okay.
How you doing? I was just thinking about Ennio Morricone.
Sure.
Anything he does is fantastic.
Yeah. No, no, I mean, he's, you know, we talked about Morricone. We've talked about him several times. And the fact that it took him to 2 years ago to win an Academy Award, or 3 years ago to win an Academy Award, is absurd.
That's criminal, yeah.
Yeah,
that's,
completely.
Yeah.
I mean, he's created some of the most iconic music in movie history.
Yeah, I think the chief one has to be the Superman one.
Yeah.
By John Williams.
John Williams, okay.
When you consider, I mean, it says Superman. I mean, it basically screams Superman in when he's playing it. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Okay, Laura, yeah. Thanks.
Okay.
Take care,
Nick.
Mona Lisa was from, I didn't know it was from a movie. Captain Carey was from the movie Captain Carey. It's a little known 1950s film. They used it in the movie, but they ultimately thought that Nat King Cole, it would work out as a single for Nat King Cole, and it did.
That's for sure.
Singing in the Rain from 1952, Singing in the Rain. When you think of the song Singing in the Rain, you probably don't think of Oliver Hardy being drenched by a faulty shower nozzle as the tune plays. That was in the 1944 movie The Big Noise. The song had actually been around for 15 years before that, having first appeared in a 1929 film. But it wasn't until it was commissioned by MGM and Gene Kelly. Yeah. Yeah, Singing in the Rain. Here's the thing, though. Stanley Kubrick has forever ruined that song for me. I mean, brilliant choice for that song, because it's like the happiest song, you know, and from one of the greatest musicals of all time. But to have that scene in Clockwork. How about this one? Let's play a little bit of this one. That's Amore from The Caddy. It's from the Martin and Lewis comedy. And Dean Martin poking fun at Italian stereotypes here in from their big movie, The Caddy. But it's become one of his signature songs. So, we got it, a little bit of it.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's Amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's Amore. Bells will ring, ting-a-ling-a-ling, ting-a-ling-a-ling, and you'll sing Vita Bella.
Bravo, John!
Hearts will play, tippy-tippy-tay, tippy-tippy-tay, like a gay tarantella.
You gotta love Dean Martin, man. You gotta love Dino. Gotta love him.
I always think of the scene in Walk Hard when they're auditioning, and he does that horrible...
Yeah.
That was a terrible, 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 terrible rendition of That's Amore.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, a lot of the songs that Dean sang in those movies were crappy, you know? That's like a lot of the songs in the Elvis movies are terrible. Like, they're just, you know, there's a few classics that came out of some of those, you know, some of the movies. Like, we'll get to a couple of them here. But for the most part, I mean, because Elvis made a lot of terrible movies. He just, you know, and, you know, meanwhile, the Beatles are taking over the country. Elvis goes off to the army. While that happens, the Beatles kind of show up. Elvis comes back, doesn't have the career he had before, and starts making a series of really terrible movies. Like, really terrible movies. And that's why the 68 comeback special was such a big deal. Because it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And that 68 comeback special is one of my favorite things ever. And it's got my favorite Elvis song in it of all time, which is If I Could Dream, which is my favorite Elvis song of all time. But yeah, that period where he was just making crappy movie after crappy movie, and the songs were terrible. The movies weren't just bad. The songs were bad. So, yeah. Anyway. Oh, yeah. I wonder if... Hard Day's Night, that's got to be mentioned, right?
I know Help is mentioned.
Help? It's got to be mentioned
Help
as well.
Help is on there.
So, all right. We got to break here for some weather. And it's going to be very unpleasant and wet and hot for the next few days. Sucks. But here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, tropical heat, humidity remain in place. Stronger storms bring heavy downpours and gusty winds. We'll get down to a low tonight between the upper 60s and the low 70s. Tomorrow, temps will climb up to around 90 degrees again with variable cloudiness. We might have some thunderstorm chances, especially late and at night. For Thursday, the 4th of July, tropical air mass becomes unstable, leading to scattered thunderstorms again, most likely in the late afternoon or the evening. For Friday, the temperatures will rise to the upper 80s. Scattered thunderstorms will be around. And for Saturday, my birthday, peak temps will range around the low to mid 80s to the mid 70s along the lake. Partly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms, especially south of the city. The temperatures are going to go down for my birthday. That's a gift. Current temperature, 79 degrees at O'Hare, at 79 at Midway, 80 degrees at the lakefront. And we'll take a break. And when we come back, we'll jump right back into the topic. Classic movie theme songs. 312-981-7200.
Ain't got no riches, ain't got no money, that runs long. But I got a heart that's strong, and a love that's tall. Ain't got no name, ain't got no fancy education. But I can see right through a powder face on a painted fool.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran at 6, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we are talking about, it's 2 for Tuesday, by the way.
Yeah!
312-981-7200, and we are talking about the best film theme songs. On this date in 1977, the number one song in the country was Gonna Fly Now from Rocky. But there have been plenty of very popular and very iconic movie theme songs that were featured in films. And we're talking about them. 312-981-7200. How about Love is a Many Splendored Thing from the movie Love is a Many Splendored Thing? Sammy Kahn wrote that for a movie starring William Holden. But it has appeared in Grease. It's appeared in Private Parts and Nutty Professor 2, The Clumps.
Prestigious.
Yeah. Que Sera Sera from The Man Who Knew Too Much, which I screened a couple of months ago. And her performance, Doris Day's performance in that, her performance of that song in the movie is just like sort of the emotional core of the entire film. And then we lost Doris Day. Like not too soon after my screening of it. Can we hear a little bit of that? This is Que Sera Sera from The Man Who Knew Too Much. Legendary song.
Que Sera Sera. What will be, will be. When I was just a little boy, I asked my mother, what will I be?
You'll make a fine doctor.
Will I be handsome? Will I be rich? Here's what she said.
My darling.
To me.
Que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be.
So this is the first time it's performed in the movie when she's putting her kid to bed.
Que sera,
but the scene at the end of the movie where it's just her is insane. It's just so good. She hated that song.
Really?
Yeah, she hated it. She said it was a kiddie song, but her manager and husband said, no, you got to do it. You got to record it. You got to do it. It won an Oscar, and then it became her theme song. It was the theme song of her TV show, so she had to embrace it. High Hopes from A Hole in the Head, a Frank Sinatra cinema vehicle that was sung with a children's choir for a Frank Capra movie called A Hole in the Head. When Robbie Williams covered the song on his Swing Both Ways tour in 2014, he performed it around the country with different choirs. An enduring entry among the best film songs of all time, High Hopes was Grammy nominated, also won an Oscar for Best Original Song. Can't Help Falling in Love from Blue Hawaii. Elvis Presley's million-selling hit was written for his movie set in Hawaii. The co-writer of the song, George Weiss, said that when he played a demo of the song to producer Hal Wallace. The latter turned it down, saying that they wanted something like, quote-unquote, Hound Dog. Weiss also wrote The Lullaby of Birdland and What a Wonderful World. The only person who initially liked the song was Presley himself, who had also created a movie song classic with Jailhouse Rock. He just happened to overhear it at Graceland as his entourage was sampling a pile of demo tapes for the movie. Elvis was told to ignore the, quote, dumb ballad, but he said, no, I want to put that in the movie. He picked the song. Everybody else turned it down. How could you turn down Can't Help Falling in Love?
I guess they were just cynics, it just sounds like.
Play a little bit of that. Elvis, man. Messing around.
Say, only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you. Shall I stay?
Such a great song.
Would it be?
It's a great song.
He is bronzed in that picture.
Yeah, well.
Wow.
Yeah, he's in Hawaii, man.
If I went to Hawaii, I'd just look like a lobster.
Neil Diamond covered it, Beck covered it, and then UB40 covered it. And I hate that version. This one was mentioned a little bit earlier, Moon River from Breakfast at Tiffany's. Henry Mancini and Johnny Mercer have pretty impeccable track records. The former has been responsible for the Pink Panther theme. The latter provided the words for dozens of films, including Hooray for Hollywood. Audrey Hepburn's singing voice was thin and limited in range, though always in tune, so Mancini took a month to compose exactly the right melody to suit the waif-like Good Time Girl. In the movie, Hepburn sang the song sitting with a guitar on a fire escape in a New York apartment, and the result was charming, forever remembered as one of the best film songs. When a studio executive tried to get the song cut, Hepburn said, "Over my dead body." And lots of greats have covered it, jazz greats and so on and so forth. But other interesting versions include those by Aretha Franklin, Patti Griffin, Elton John, R.E.M., and Morrissey.
Morrissey?
I didn't know Morrissey covered that song. Wow. Moon River. Morrissey did a version of Moon River. All righty then. Yeah, that's a classic. Breakfast at Tiffany's, also a pretty classic movie, except for every scene with Mickey Rooney, which is one of the most wildly offensive Asian stereotypes that you could possibly imagine. I mean, I don't even know how they thought they'd get away with it then. I mean, I know times were different, but man, if you watch that now, because I think it's a really terrific movie outside of that, because I really think Audrey Hepburn is fantastic in it. And I know Blake Edwards directed it, but man, that stuff with Mickey Rooney, I mean, it's painful. Painful. So how about this one, the Days of Wine and Roses from Days of Wine and Roses, the movie. Henry Mancini, Johnny Mercer, again. They contributed the title song to Blake Edwards' film starring Jack Lemmon. The phrase Days of Wine and Roses was taken from a 19th century English poem. Andy Williams had a hit with the song, which was also covered by Julie London and Wes Montgomery. Yeah, Days of Wine and Roses. You ever see that movie?
I have, yeah, when I was quite small, but I remember seeing it.
Yeah. Pretty heavy stuff. How about my favorite things from The Sound of Music? There were some new songs for the cinema version of the Rodgers and Hammerstein Broadway musical, but one Julie Andrews got hold. Once Julie Andrews got hold of them, they became more popular and classics beyond their placing among the best film songs ever, including my favorite things in Do Re Mi. When did my favorite things become a Christmas song?
Is it a Christmas song?
They play it at Christmas?
I don't know.
It's not a Christmas song.
It is not.
But they play it at Christmas. It's kind of, you know, on the rotation when they play Christmas songs.
Yeah, I guess they're just like, it's, you know, a family song. It's something that everybody recognizes. It's about things.
I guess, and you get things for Christmas, right?
Yeah, I suppose so.
I don't know. I really don't know when that happened, when it became a Christmas song, but it gets played in the rotation with all the other Christmas tunes. So, yeah. All right. Why don't we take a break here, and then we got the news, and then after the news, we'll jump right back in here. We want to hear from you guys. With your talk or text, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We are talking about classic film themes, movies, songs from movies, 312-981-7200. The news is coming up right after this.
I wear my sunglasses at night so I can keep track of visions in my eyes.
Same song as Sweet Dreams. Eurythmics. Same song.
Yeah, pretty much.
Corey Hart. Who the hell who requested Corey Hart?
I'm going to give you one guess.
Ike.
Yep.
Good Lord. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. That's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. And here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6, right here on WGN. So we have been talking about some of the classic film theme songs, movies that came from, or songs that came from movies that became hits, that became iconic, that became really, really popular and memorable. And we're doing this because today marks the anniversary of. In 1977, the number one song in this country was Gonna Fly Now from Rocky, which was a smash hit and was everywhere. So we're talking about memorable film theme songs. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Here is Francis on WGN. Hi, Francis.
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
All right.
I was telling the young man that I like all of the songs I've heard so far. And I told him that the one that I remember recently as the most memorable one is the song from Dreamgirls, I'm Telling You I'm Not Going.
Yeah.
And I told him it was because I got all emotional because I get involved in the movies and I felt like I was Effie White, and it was such a hurting thing, but it was so good. And also Yankee Doodle Dandy with James Cagney.
James Cagney, classic. Classic. Yeah, that's a classic. Yeah, well, you know what, Francis? The performance by Jennifer Hudson is what sells that song. It's a good song, but she's unbelievable when she sings it.
That's true.
Unbelievable. All right, Francis, thank you.
All right, you guys have a good one.
You too.
And happy birthday.
Okay, well, thank you. Very kind of you. More texts are coming in. We're talking about movie songs, songs from movies, great film theme songs. Let's see. 816 area code says, Nick, how many Randy Newman songs must there be? Also, a great song that perfectly fits with the movie of the same title is Thank God It's Friday from 1978. Yeah, Randy Newman, he's written a bunch of, you know, he does the music for the Toy Story movies, he composes the music for the Toy Story movies and everything. And, but You've Got a Friend in Me from the original Toy Story is classic. It had to have won the Oscar.
Hmm.
It had to have, right?
Well, so that movie came out in 95, so it would have been the 96 Oscars, right?
Yeah. It doesn't say, so it's listed here, but it doesn't say whether it won or not. Randy Newman, the master of biting satire, has always been a fantastic soundtrack composer, and his glorious feel-good song for the Pixar movie Toy Story, sung by Lyle Lovett, became the theme tune for the series of films. I forgot Lyle Lovett sang it. I always associate it with Randy Newman.
So it was nominated.
It didn't win?
It did not win.
What won?
Colors of the Wind from Pocahontas, which I think is an awful, awful film. I think Pocahontas is about as bottom of the barrel as Disney goes.
What? Well, you know, the Oscar went to the same studio, so I guess that's
yeah. And I mean,
I guess that's something.
It's out. You know, that
what
was
were the
Alan
other nominees?
Dead Man Walking from Dead Man Walking.
Great song.
That's the boss, Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, great song.
Have You Ever Really Loved a Woman from Don Juan DeMarco?
That's
Brian Adams,
right?
Michael Kamen and Robert John Lang.
Brian Adams.
And then Moonlight from Sabrina. That's John Williams.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So, we got the theme from Mahogany. Do You Know Where You're Going To? By Diana Ross, which has stood the test of time and was defeated by Keith Carradine's I'm Easy from 1975. Hashtag go figure. I'm Easy is a great song. The great song. 331 area code says, what about Car Wash from the movie Car Wash? Classic.
Gotta have it.
Yeah. 815 area code, The Way We Were. Beautiful theme song, they say. 563 area code says, Streets of Philadelphia, enough said. The boss again. 405 says, Queen's Flash from Flash Gordon. Cheesy movie, but fun song. The soundtrack to Flash Gordon rules. There's another reason I can't stand that damn Bohemian Rhapsody movie. Not one mention of Flash Gordon. No mention of Flash Gordon. How do you make a movie about Queen and not have them recording at least one song from the Flash Gordon soundtrack?
I guarantee you, I don't have the Blu-ray or anything because I despise that movie, but I guarantee you there's like a deleted scene or something.
You can't. There, they you were can't. Doing. I mean, there were so many crimes committed by that movie. You know, chief of them being that it's 90%, 95% of that movie is an absolute lie. But then add that to the fact that you don't include Flash Gordon. What are we talking about here? All right, here's Whit on WGN. Hi, Whit.
Hey, Nick, what's happening?
Hey.
You're forgetting about the king of the movie titles. Kenny Loggins ruled the 80s.
Yeah, he did. Kenny Loggins, yeah. you got Top Gun, you got Caddyshack, you got Footloose.
Footloose, yep. Yeah, man.
Yep, yep. Yes, all sir. Big hits. All big hits.
All big hits.
Yeah. All right, Whit, thanks, man.
All right.
Yeah, Kenny Loggins dominated the 80s movie scene. Yeah.
I think the best one's still I'm All Right.
Oh, yeah.
That's the best one he did.
By far my favorite of all the movie soundtrack stuff he did. And, of course, it's from Caddyshack. So, like, right there. We mentioned before Help from 1965. Will you play a little bit of that? Because it only rules.
Yes, we can.
All right.
What's this? A season ticket.
I don't know. I'd love a season enemy suit. So self-assured.
With a ring like that, I could, dare I say it, rule the world. I didn't encourage that wink. Hey, I'll cut this one hand.
Yeah. Was that the trailer?
Yeah, that's what they had that listed. It was the movie trailer for Help.
Okay.
Which I forgot that the plot of that movie involves them trying to get, like, a bunch of people trying to get Ringo's ring.
Yeah, it's stuck on his hand.
Yeah.
Stuck on his finger.
So they got a guy trying to cut it off with a chainsaw.
Yeah, man. How do you not remember that?
I don't know. I won't lie to you. I'm not watching Help every day or every year, really.
I love that movie.
I'm more of a Hard Day's Night kid.
Well, Hard Day's Night's a better movie.
It's so funny.
It's a better movie, I got to say, but I kind of like the music more in Help. So that's the... So it says, plenty of Beatles songs merit inclusion, but the best film songs, including A Hard Day's Night, but the nod goes to Help, which was written as the title track to the group's second movie, a madcap comedy that was originally mooted for Peter Sellers, The sense of desperation is palpable in lines such as, and now my life has changed in so many ways. My independence seems to vanish in the haze. John Lennon told Rolling Stone in 1970, I meant it. The whole Beatle thing was just beyond comprehension. To Sir With Love, which was mentioned a little bit earlier. Of course, To Sir With Love, classic. Mrs. Robinson from The Graduate. Paul Simon wrote Mrs. Robinson for The Graduate, starring Anne Bancroft as Mrs. Robinson, a middle-aged woman who seduces the young Dustin Hoffman. Simon and Garfunkel's harmonies are stunning, helping it become one of the best film songs in the decade. A famous line asks, where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? Simon was once asked by his baseball hero, Mickey Mantle, why he hadn't name-checked him in the song. He said, it's all about syllables, Mick. It's how many beats there are.
Come on, Mickey.
Oh, man. Well, you know, yeah, you know what's not on here? I'm looking now. Wise Up's not on here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, or Save Me. Not on here. Wise Up. Did you know this? A little piece of trivia about Wise Up. Wise Up was written for Jerry Maguire.
Really?
It's in Jerry Maguire. Wise Up is in Jerry Maguire, and Paul Thomas Anderson loved it so much that he put it in his movie. Save Me was written specifically for Magnolia.
Yeah.
But Wise Up.
That's Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire. Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's ridiculous that Save Me is not included here. Ridiculous. From Magnolia. Come on. What are we talking about here? So. All right. We got some weather here. It's going to be hot and wet, and it's going to stink for the next, like, 4 days. That's pretty much, that's the entire forecast. For today, tropical heat, humidity remain in place. Stronger storms will bring heavy downpours and gusty winds. The lows will get down to the upper 60s to the low 70s. Tomorrow, temps again climbed out to around 90 with variable cloudiness. There might be some thunderstorm chances as well, especially late at night. For Thursday, tropical air becomes unstable, leading to some scattered thunderstorms, again, likely in the late afternoon or evening. For Friday, temps reach the upper 80s, scattered thunderstorms erupt along the front. And then on Saturday, peak temps will range in the low to mid-80s, far south to the mid-70s along the lake. Partly cloudy, chance of thunderstorms, especially south of the city. It's currently 79 degrees at O'Hare, it's 79 at Midway, and it's 80 degrees at the lakefront. Okay. It is time to take a break, and then when we come back, we'll jump right back into the topic. What are your favorite film theme songs, songs that became popular that are associated with movies? Once again, this is the anniversary of the number one. It was number one in the country on this date, and that would be Gonna Fly Now from Rocky. So we're talking about movie themes in honor of that. Okay, we'll be back. Never surrender, baby. Corey Hart.
It's almost like you don't like him.
Corey Hart. No, I don't. I don't. You know what? I don't hate Corey Hart. He's dated.
Sure.
I mean, like, he's got the spiky hair and he wears his sunglasses at night.
So he can.
Yeah.
I like that song. I actually do. Even though it did rip off Eurythmics and Eurythmics.
Completely.
Eurythmics is like godlike. Annie Lennox is a saint.
Yes, one of the greatest voices in music. So, all right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And we are talking about songs that are from movies. So there's a song by the Plimsolls called A Million Miles Away. Which is featured like 8,000 times in Valley Girl, which was the movie we were mentioning earlier this week with Nicolas Cage. Can you find that Plimsolls Million Miles Away? Because it's a massive jam. Early 80s, just a massive jam. And they play it a bunch of times in the movie. The Plimsolls. Here we go. This is such a great song. Gotta get to the chorus. Keep it going. This song rules. You know that song?
I do. It's very familiar. I couldn't have told you who it was. But I gotta say, the lead singer looks like a cross between Liam Gallagher and Joey Ramone.
He does, yeah. That's essentially their only hit. They were a great band, but that was kind of their only hit. And there's another song in there. There's another song in Valley Girl that's called Eyes of a Stranger's. By the Paolas. Look that one up, because that song rules. That's this soundtrack for, by the way, the soundtrack.
By Queensryche?
No. I know Queensryche. I know that song. This is Eyes of a Stranger by the Paolas. The Paolas. So this is a great song, and they're in the movie.
Definitely recognize that.
Jam. Again, featured in Valley Girl. And they're in the movie too. They perform the song. It's such a great movie, man. And all the songs on there. Million Miles Away is the one that stands out the most because it's kind of the thing. But yeah. So how about Everybody's Talking from Midnight Cowboy?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
It's great. And mention Fred Neil and you may get a blank stare, yet he wrote one of the best film songs of all time and one of the most famous songs of the late 20th century. Folk singer Neil, whose work inspired Bob Dylan, was uneasy at the publicity after Harry Nilsson turned Everybody's Talking into a worldwide hit in 1970 following its use in the movie Midnight Cowboy. He fled to Florida to set up a marine project and devoted the rest of his life to protecting dolphins. So Stevie Wonder covered it, Glenn Campbell covered it, Iggy Pop, and so did, of course, Leonard Nimoy. Let's see. Here is Karen on WGN. Hi, Karen.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
All right. What's up?
Well, I have a song for Nick, and it's Swan Lake from Dracula.
Oh, sure.
It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
For such a bad movie.
Yeah, well, that's used at the beginning credits of the original Dracula.
Did she say it was a bad movie?
Yeah, she did. She's not right.
Oh.
The original Dracula with Bela Lugosi, it's a pretty great movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as good as Horror of Dracula.
No.
But that's a totally... That's a whole other...
This is Universal Hammer. Karen, thanks for the call. Here's Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. Love your show, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, Bob Dylan, Knocking on Heaven's Door from the movie Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid.
Sure, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. Man.
That was back in the 70s, I think.
Early 70s. Yeah, early 70s.
Yeah, and you never find that movie. Very, very rarely.
It's out there. You got to dig for it, though, Tom. It's a hard one to get, but it's a really terrific movie.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah, it's a great one. But, yeah, so there you go. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. All right, Tom, thanks, man.
All right, bud.
Yeah.
I hate that Guns N' Roses cover.
Oh.
Have you seen him do it live?
No, why would I?
Where he does the, give me some reggae! And then they go into the reggae section.
Here's the thing. It is a very unpopular opinion. I can't stand Guns N' Roses.
I can do Appetite for Destruction, and that's literally it.
I can't handle his voice. It's ultimately because of Axl. I can't stand his voice. It's not that they don't write some jams, because they, you know.
They do. It's.
You know? I like Izzy Stradlin. He's my favorite guy in the band.
Mm. Is Izzy Stradlin?
Izzy Stradlin's my favorite guy in the band. But there are two songs by them that I like. I'm trying to remember what they are. They're both on the Use Your Illusion albums.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I couldn't even tell you what's on those. Couldn't even tell you.
What is the name of that song? It's a very controversial song. Real controversial, with real offensive lyrics about homosexuals and immigrants, and I can't remember what it is.
And you like that song?
I do. Yeah, no, I love it. And then there's a couple of other. There's another one on the Use Your Illusion. I don't know which one it is. Go to the track listings.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go
so
nuts.
Do you know if it's one or two?
I don't know.
Oh, crap.
I don't know. Just go fly through the titles.
Right Next Door to Hell.
No.
Dust and Bones.
No.
Don't Cry.
No.
Live and Let Die. No.
No.
Perfect Crime.
No.
You Ain't the First.
No.
Bad Obsession.
No.
Back Off Bitch.
No.
Double Talk and Jive.
No.
November Rain.
No.
The Garden.
No.
Garden of Eden.
No.
Don't Damn Me.
No.
Bad Apples. Dead Horse. Coma.
No.
All right. So that's all of User Illusion 1.
Oh, so I guess it's on 2. I guess the two songs are on 2.
God. Civil War, 14 Years.
That's it, Civil War.
Civil War.
That's the first one. And then keep going.
14 Years, Yesterday's, Knocking on Heaven's Door, Get in the Ring, Shotgun Blues, Breakdown, Pretty Tied Up, Locomotive, So Fine, Estranged, You Could Be Mine, Don't Cry, and My World.
Okay, it's not on there. I guess I don't know what they did. Civil War is a jam.
Okay.
But the other song, that the offensive song, I can't remember what it's called. I guess I can't remember what it's called. It's like a ballad, and it caused quite an uproar when it came out.
Boy.
So, all right. Well, we have to break here for news, and then we'll talk more about songs from movies.
We'll list more Guns N' Roses albums in their entirety.
Exactly. I'm looking at the upcoming songs. Cat Stevens, Harold and Maude. That makes me very happy. All right. The news is up next. Okay,
yeah.
It's One in a Million. That's the name of the song.
And the album is Lies, Lies, Lies.
Okay, all right. I thought it was on one of the Illusion albums. But at Civil War and One in a Million, the only two songs by Guns N' Roses that I like.
I'm looking at these lyrics right now.
Man. I know.
Jesus.
I know, man. I know. All right, let's take a break. We got the news coming up, and also coming up at 5 o'clock is Steve Grzanich. Little this girl, you don't know, you don't know what I got. Put me down, but I've got the fastest set of wheels in town. When something comes up to me, he don't even try. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Who requested that?
So that's coming to us from Jeff in Hammond.
Jeff in Hammond.
Thankfully, bleaching my ears from the filth that was that Guns N' Roses song.
Did you listen to it?
I listened to part of it. Shameful.
Yes. Yeah, it was. You can imagine what a stir it called. It caused a massive stir.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we are talking about movies that have songs in them, and songs from movies that have movies in them. We have All the Time in the World from Her Majesty's Secret Service. Which, you know what? That actually might be my favorite Bond movie.
Majesty's Secret Service.
Yeah, that one might be my. I know it's way
with
up
George
there.
Lazenby.
He's amazing. That's a great movie. When was the last time you saw that?
You know,
it's a great. It's a great movie, man. It really is. It's a wildly underrated movie.
Mm. I've honestly always looked at, you know, they have that big you know, Bond,
yeah,
full thing. And I'm just like, you know, if it ever gets below 150, might just have to do it.
Yeah.
Because there's so many great ones.
There are great ones, and there are some terrible ones, too.
There are. Big fan of Moonraker.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. I think that movie is insane.
It's the worst Bond movie ever made.
It is. No.
Oh, okay.
Well,
all right.
It is. Well, I mean, do you count the Woody Allen
Casino Royale? People normally don't count that one, and they don't count Never Say Never Again.
I don't like Never Say Never Again, really.
That was not... The Broccoli's didn't produce it, so that's why it's not an official Bond movie.
No.
And it came out the same time as Octopussy. They were both in the theaters at the same time.
Which, I mean, you're just kind of, pick your poison there.
Yeah. Octopussy's not very good either.
Yeah. The best Roger Moore, I think, is A View to a Kill.
No. I like it. Live and Let Die is the best Roger Moore. Live and Let Die.
I'm a big fan of A View to a Kill. I don't know if you heard, Grace Jones walked off the set of Bond 25.
She did?
Yeah, she's gonna be in it, you know, as a callback to her time. But when she went to the set and she saw how few lines she was having, she realized she was only getting a cameo, and she was like, "No, I'm Grace Jones. I don't have to do this."
She's always gonna be Strange from Boomerang.
Yeah.
Strange. Always gonna be Strange from Boomerang, which is one of my favorite Eddie Murphy movies of all time. I think that movie's great, and about seven people like it. I think that movie is great. Reginald Hudlin, man. All right, we got Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which is a fine song. It's a nice, lovely little song, but it completely stops the movie, halts the movie, so that they can ride around on a bicycle and have the song play. And I love that movie, except for that scene. I'm like, ugh.
Shout out to Burt Bacharach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what are you going to... The guy's written some unbelievable songs. B.J. Thomas had got the big hit with it. If you want to sing out from Harold and Maude, Cat Stevens, man. I love me some Cat Stevens. He's just so great. Dueling Banjos from from Deliverance. Mm-hmm. Live and Let Die from Live and Let Die is also... We got The Way We Were. Session bassist Carol Kay said it took 33 takes to get The Way We Were exactly as the producers wanted it. The hard work paid off. Barbara Streisand's song, which opens with the sparkling line, "Memories like the corners of my mind," was recorded for the film about a love affair between Streisand's character and Robert Redford's character. That's a pretty classic. That's a classic one. And then we mentioned earlier, Knocking on Heaven's Door, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, Sam Peckinpah movie. James Coburn, Kris Kristofferson in that. It's been covered by, we mentioned Guns N' Roses, Randy Crawford, Eric Clapton. Oh, yeah, I remember Clapton's version.
Clapton's version.
Brian Ferry, Paul Simon, Jerry Garcia, Tom Petty, and Dolly Parton. Wow, that's an impressive group of people.
It's an impressive song.
Yes, it is. Staying Alive from Saturday Night Fever. Which, of course, that's another one that gets misinterpreted. That's another movie that gets misinterpreted.
It's a depressing movie.
It is a totally depressing movie, and it does not celebrate that lifestyle. It's very critical of that lifestyle, but yet when the movie came out, everybody was like, oh, we want to be like Tony Manero and go to the discos every Friday and Saturday, but that's not what the movie's... movie takes a very clear point of view on being very, very critical of that lifestyle. You know, a lot of people don't remember that Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys was from a movie.
Yeah, I did not know that until I saw that.
And it's a terrific movie. Have you ever seen The Electric Horseman?
No.
Oh, man, it's really good.
But I do love the song, Mama, Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys. I think
that's from that movie.
Yeah.
And Willie Nelson's in the movie. It's Jane Fonda and Robert Redford. And, I mean, come on, they date back to Barefoot in the Park, for God's sake, which is one of my favorite movies ever. But I love The Electric Horseman. I love that movie, and Sidney Pollack directed it. It's a really terrific movie. Always Look on the Bright Side of Life from Monty Python's Life of Brian. I didn't know that they
Excellent
were going to include that.
Excellent choice.
Rarely does a song of really acidic comedy find such public acceptance. Eric Idle's Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, a gallows humor song sung cheerily by a man waiting to be crucified, has become... He's not waiting to be crucified. He's being crucified. He's
actively being crucified. Yeah. He is in the process of being crucified.
Right. has become a sing-along anthem at sporting events around the globe. I think that's hilarious.
Well, yeah. And they use it right because you know who should be singing that song is always the losing team.
Yeah.
It has to be the losing team. It is not a positive song insofar as it's about, you want to talk about good things. It's about how everything is crap, but at least you got your health.
Idol sang a live version of it for the closing ceremony of the 2012 London Olympics.
I didn't know he was, I found this out. He's married to a woman from Chicago.
Yes.
Model.
Yes.
Oh, man. I wonder if he ever gets over here.
Yeah. He's been here several times.
I got to find him.
Yeah. Eric Idle. How about 9 to 5?
Gotta.
From the movie 9 to 5, Dolly Parton's anthem for the worker, written for the comedy that she starred alongside Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, won the country singer multiple awards. The song has appeared in numerous TV shows, including The Simpsons, and notable cover versions include one by Alison Krauss. Rawhide from the Blues Brothers.
That's what they choose?
Rawhide?
Not Soul Man?
It would be hard for the Blues Brothers not to appear in a rundown of best film songs, given that the soundtrack is stuffed with classic Southern soul. Rawhide, however, is an exception, a fine popular country song. It was a hit for Frankie Lane and the TV theme for the popular TV show of the same name, but there is no more exuberant version than the one delivered by the Blues Brothers in the John Landis comedy. One very funny scene involves the band pretending to be the country group The Good Old Boys in order to play the game at Bob's Country Bunker as countless beer bottles aimed at the band shatter on impact with the chicken wire fencing protecting the stage. Yeah, that's a weird choice, but okay.
I mean, it's a super funny scene.
God, I hate this song. Oh, I hate this song. I just called to say I love you from The Woman in Red. Oh, I can't stand that song. From the Gene Wilder movie, The Woman in Red, as Stevie Wonder became a massive hit. That was a massive hit, and it did win the Oscar for Best Original Song. Oh, man.
Your daughter doesn't like that song.
Yeah. Whew. Ghostbusters, which we mentioned. It's one of the biggest, some of the best film songs they pervade popular culture well after their original appearance. Stop almost anyone on the street and say, who are you going to call? And they will most certainly answer Ghostbusters. The iconic theme song for the 1984 movie was written and performed by Detroit musician Ray Parker Jr. and remains his biggest hit. The determined and upbeat number took on a life of its own after the release of the film, and the line, I ain't afraid of no ghosts, has appeared in numerous pop culture references. So they write about it, but they don't mention the lawsuit, the Huey Lewis lawsuit at all. Here.
Half-assing it.
How about this? Don't You Forget About Me. I love this song.
Yeah.
Breakfast Club. Coming-of-age drama that transcends its era and speaks to all generations, The Breakfast Club's emotional closing scene in which five high school students leave their Saturday detention having asserted their individuality and found out about their own true character remains an iconic piece of high school cinema. It made stars of the young actors nicknamed the Brat Pack and ensured that Simple Minds single went down in generation as a generation-defining slice of synth pop. Who turned it down? Somebody to Billy Idol, maybe?
Yeah.
Somebody turned that song down because it wasn't.
I feel like you two might have turned it down.
No, it wasn't originally meant for Simple Minds. They were like third on the list. I'm pretty sure like Billy Idol turned it down, and like another band turned it down. Then finally, it ended up the Simple Minds, and then it turned out to be like this
massive hit.
Yeah. Then of course you have the final shot of Judd Nelson with his fist in the air.
Yeah. Okay. Here it was. It was. Offered to Brian Ferry.
Brian Ferry, okay.
And then Corey Hart.
Corey Hart?
Yeah.
Who we just played a little bit earlier.
Yeah, and then it was offered to Cy Kernan from The Fix.
Oh, from The Fix, okay.
and Billy Idol.
And Billy Idol. I had heard the Billy Idol. Cy Kernan from The Fix. I love The Fix. But it ended up going to Simple Minds. And if I'm not mistaken, at the time, Jim Kerr was married to Chrissy Hynde.
Correctamundo.
And she talked him into taking the song.
Yep.
Because he didn't want to do it.
That's exactly what happened.
So the coolest chick in the history of rock basically told him to do the song.
Yeah.
All right. All right, we got a break here. If you guys want to jump in, we're going to wrap things up. We've got some weather coming up, and then after the weather, we'll wrap it all up with more plastic classic songs from movies, film theme songs. 312-981-7200. Again, on this date in 1977, Gonna Fly Now from Rocky was the number one song in the country. Think about that. All right, here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, tropical heat and humidity remain in place. Stronger storms will bring in heavy downpours and gusty winds. Lows will get into the upper 60s or low 70s. Tomorrow, temps will climb up to around 90 degrees again. Variable cloudiness. We might have some thunderstorm chances, especially late and at night. For Thursday, tropical air mass is unstable, leading to some scattered thunderstorms, most likely in the late afternoon or the evening. Then for Friday, temperatures reach the upper 80s. Scattered thunderstorms will erupt along the front. And then for Saturday, peak temps will be in the low to mid-80s, far south to the mid-70s along the lake. Partly cloudy chance of thunderstorms, especially south of the lake. It is currently 79 degrees at O'Hare, at 79 at Midway, 80 at the lakefront. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up the show and talk more about film themes, movies, songs. There you go. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich coming up at 5 with the opening bell, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. It is Tuesday, so there you go. Wrapping up two for Tuesday. Yeah. So we're talking about movies and songs that are from movies. Classic songs from movies. We're Twist and Shout from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. The less we discuss Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the happier I will be. And La Bamba from La Bamba.
Starring Lou Diamond Phillips.
I am Lou Diamond Phillips. He's great in that movie. Oh, Unchained Melody from Ghost. So I used to live in the Honeybee Complex, which was the apartment complex that my friend Scott and I lived at the Honeybee Complex. And it was just this, it was like, it's on Foster west of Cumberland, and all of the apartment complexes look exactly the same. They are all just cookie cutter, built in the 70s apartment complexes that you could just get lost. You could, you know, like, go, I don't know where I live, because every single door, every single window, every single building looks exactly the same. So there was a parking lot courtyard. There were a lot of units. It was a big, you know, it was a big whole, like a whole complex. We were on the third floor. And across the courtyard from us, parking lot slash courtyard, there was someone who lived in the building across the courtyard, who would have his windows open, and he would blast Unchained Melody all the time. So, like, whenever he would blast it, Scott and I would be like, oh, great, Swayze's home. So we would call, so his nickname was Swayze, because, and it was, he would just play the same song. He would just play Unchained Melody, like, 100 times, and blast it. Like, we could hear it in our apartment, like, casting over the courtyard slash parking lot. So we would always go, yeah, Swayze, Swayze's home. how about this? Everything I do it for you. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves from Bryan Adams. Streets of Philadelphia from the movie Philadelphia gets mentioned here. Hakuna Matata from The Lion King. Why did they use that one and not like Can You Feel the Love Tonight? Wasn't Can You Feel the Love Tonight like bigger? Wasn't that a bigger hit?
I mean, yes, I mean, it depends on who you're asking. If you're asking adults who watch that movie, yes. If you're asking children who watch that movie, it's Hakuna Matata. It's the most fun.
Okay.
Kids usually like, oh, can you feel the,
oh, okay.
The love scene.
You've Got a Friend in Me from Toy Story. which, as we read a little bit earlier, was originally performed by, and I totally forgot Lyle Lovett performed it. I always associate that with, I just assume Randy Newman. You Must Love Me from Evita. Madonna put real emotion and handled the tricky soprano chords as she triumphed with one of the 17 demanding songs in Evita, the musical turned film story of the First Lady of Argentina, Eva Perón. The song was written especially for the movie by Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice. Madonna also covered Don't Cry for Me, Argentina for the film. Yeah. All right. How about, oh, man, My Heart Will Go On from Titanic. Wait a minute. Hold on. You back this song?
Of course I back that song. I hate that movie, but for some God unknown reason, I love that song.
Okay, this is really weird. Did you know that Dan Shugrue adores the song and has never seen the movie? This is weird, man. This is weird that two producers in a row share a love for a really terrible song.
It is not a really terrible song.
It is a terrible song.
It is not a really terrible... It's a emotional song. It's the only part of that movie that I believed was...
I like Titanic.
See, and I think most of it is kind of pretty much crap, except for when the boat actually goes down.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, and that takes an hour.
What are you talking about? How long is that movie? That
it's 3 hours. It's 3 hours. The boat hits the iceberg, and there's over an hour left.
I guess I always just I always fast forward to just down the movie.
I'll tell you right now, and I don't hate the beginning, the love story stuff. I don't hate it. It's not great, not good. I like Billy Zane because he's like the
he's so scummy.
Oh, he's so great, and he's like a completely one dimensionally written villain.
I have a child.
I love Billy Zane in it. So, but once the boat hits the iceberg, it kicks ass. It's great, and it's like Cameron action great. Like the last hour, 20 minutes of that movie, I'm telling you.
There's some great stuff. There's some great shots, like when the guy who built the boat is like changing the clock as the boat is tipping. Yeah. There's some good stuff there. The only part that really gets me is the scene with the quartet when they play Nearer My God to Thee.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got the old couple holding each other and the water's coming up and the Irish mom reading the story to the kids about how they lived for 1,000 years and all this. That does get me every single time.
You know, here's the thing about it is one of the things that I always say is great about that movie, about Titanic, like ingenious, is the way Cameron tells the story. Because early in the movie, when they've got Gloria Stewart on the boat with Bill Paxton and Susie Amos and the other people, you know, he explains what happens to the boat, like what happens to the ship when it hits the iceberg, what happens, how it cracks, how this fills up with water, how that fills up with water, and explains it like in a PowerPoint presentation and, you know, to the people that are in the room, and therefore also explaining it to the audience so that when the boat hits the iceberg in the last part of the movie, no one has to stop to explain anything. There's no stopping to explain what's happening to the hull, what's happening, you know, because Cameron got all that out of the way earlier in the movie. So once it hits that iceberg, it's nonstop. I think that's great. I think it's great. Let's see. Kiss from a Rose by Seal from Batman Forever. I love that song. I love that song. I love Seal.
Seal's great.
Oh, my God. I love him. Huey Lewis, Power of Love, and Back in Time from Back to the Future. How could that not be mentioned?
Gotta be.
Suicide is Painless from MASH.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right, a couple more here. Lose Yourself from 8 Mile.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a huge album. I was always afraid that my mom was going to find out I was listening to Eminem. So when I was listening to it on my Discman, or better known as the CD Bro.
Yeah, the CD Bro.
The off-brand Discman.
Right.
I would hide it underneath, I'd sit on the couch and hide it underneath a couch cushion, as though somehow that would stop my mom from being like, what you listening to?
Yeah.
Because she'd see me there, CD player in the couch, headphones on.
Right.
And she's like, this kid is clearly trying to hide something from me. He's an idiot.
It was a sure fight. I mean, they say it's one of the best songs, one of the best film songs of all time. And it won the Oscar that year. And it was penned for the autobiographical film 8 Mile. He recalled the writing, the soundtrack, was different from my usual work because it forced me to step into Rabbit, the character I play in the movie, and write from his point of view. The late, great Curtis Hanson directed that movie. He's such a great director. And then finally, a song that I can't stand, that when I hear it, I want to throw things through windows and break furniture and smash speakers. Happy from Despicable Me 2, Pharrell Williams. I cannot stand that song. It does the absolute opposite of making me happy. Can't stand that song. And it was everywhere.
Yeah, couldn't escape it. Top 40 radio.
Oh, my God.
Every single day. Every single day.
Oh. Anyway. So those are some memorable songs from movies. And again, I can't believe that Power of Love was not included in that article. How do you not include Power of Love from Back to the Future?
There's a few omissions. There's a few omissions. And this one stops at, you know, at Despicable Me 2, which came out, what?
About 5 years ago?
Yeah.
4 or 5 years ago?
6 years ago.
It's been that long?
2013.
Jeez.
I feel like it was yesterday that Happy was literally blaring on the radio five times a day.
It probably was. Well, anyway.
I never really liked those movies anyway.
I don't either. Not really. The Minions are funny, but I never really liked the movie. Mm. You know? So, my mom loves Minions. That's her favorite. It's like her, the Minions are her favorite.
I'm not surprised.
Her favorite thing of all time are like Minions. She loves them. So, all right. Listen, tomorrow on the show is Vincent Francone, is the author of a book called A Soft Lunacy. We'll have Wildcard Wednesday and, of course, another round of Know Your Onion. So know the difference between real news headlines and fake comedy onion news headlines, and you can win some prizes.